evening. The meeting is called to order. Capistrano Unified School District. Good evening. The meeting is called to order. Trustee Maddox, would you care to lead us in the pledge? Consideration and adoption of the agenda. Do we have a motion?
I move.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Okay, roll call. Ms. Bose, once again.
President Adonisio.
Here.
Trustee Winston.
Here.
Trustee Christensen.
Here.
Trustee Brick.
Here.
Trustee Bryson.
Here.
Trustee Maddox.
Here.
Trustee Palazzo.
Here.
Student Advisor Chase Ishii.
Here.
I am now reporting out. Thank you very much. Now I'm reporting out on closed session. With regard to item 46A, A1 through A3, the board voted 7-0 to accept staff recommendation. Item 46B, no action. Item 46C, no action. That is the result of our closed session. We move now on to our open session, special recognitions. Ms. Hatchell.
President Adonisio and members of the board, tonight we have the great pleasure of honoring several CUSD students for their outstanding achievements and exemplary representation of our school district. The first to be honored this evening is Kelly Mitchell. Kelly, will you please come forward? Mitchell, a junior at Capitol Valley High School, is being honored tonight for being a four-time winner of the ACME Animation Competition, all in just 1 year. Kelly has been described by her principal, Denny Christensen, and her art teacher, Kent Baker, as a bright student with an unbelievably natural talent for animation. A member of the principal's honor roll, Kelly is a well-rounded student who has risen to the top of her class and in the state of California and five other states who compete in this regional competition. Kelly, we are confident that we'll be seeing your work on the big screen someday, and best wishes to you and congratulations on this outstanding achievement. Our next honoree is Brooke Bell. Brooke, will you please come forward? Brooke is an exceptional fourth grade student at Las Flores Elementary School, and for the second year in a row has been selected as a finalist for the Young Rembrandts National Calendar Contest. Brooke's submission of a graphic swan in the 08-09 contest was amongst hundreds to be judged by a panel of the Young Rembrandts directors from across the country. Her drawing is the April feature, which I have in my hand here, in this year's calendar. There you go. Very nice. Tonight we also have our Young Rembrandts Regional Director, Ms. Stephanie Black, with us to celebrate Brooke's amazing accomplishments. Ms. Black, I understand you wanted to say a couple of words?
I'm very pleased to be here tonight to recognize Brooke. I wanted to just take a moment and explain that she has submitted her drawings 2 years in a row and competed against hundreds of students at the local and regional level before getting to the national level with over 500 students to compete against to win. So we were very pleased this year to be able to award her $150 worth of art supplies, and we're looking forward to seeing her submission for next year. And we're very grateful to the CUSD Community Ed Department for helping to host our classes at these schools. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Capitol Valley Senior Pooja Desai. Pooja, will you come on up? Pooja was recently honored as a semifinalist in the Intel Science Talent Search. Competing with 176 high schools across the world, Pooja was one of 300 international students selected for this honor, which brings together the best and brightest scientific minds with the hope of encouraging their ongoing pursuit of making a difference in the area of science and technology. Amongst the ranks of Intel winners are 7 Nobel Peace Prize winners. Pooja, we expect nothing less from you in the future. Being an IB diploma candidate with a GPA of 4.58 and the number one academically ranked senior at CVHS, we're certainly proud of you and know that you're well on your way. Congratulations. And our next honorees are also outstanding Capo Valley seniors. I promise we didn't stack the deck because of you, Chase. They just happen to all come from Capo Valley tonight. Congratulations to Shannon Keong and Stephen Huang. Come forward, please. Shannon and Stephen were recognized as candidates for the prestigious United States Presidential Scholars Program. Established by executive order of the president in 1964, this program aims to honor students who demonstrate exceptional scholarship and talent and is considered to be the nation's highest honor for high school students. Ranking in the top 3 students in her class with a GPA of 4.54, Shannon is an IB diploma candidate and ATMS scholar. She also serves as editor-in-chief of the school newspaper and is a member of the varsity swim team. Shannon hopes to pursue a career in medicine with a specialty in pediatric surgery. A 4-year cross-country and track athlete, Stephen earned the title of most valuable scholar athlete for his team. He also serves as a commissioner of technological services and participates in many CVHS campus organizations. I might add that he was a Riley Elementary School graduate as well. Thank you very much. Stephen, my former school. Stephen earned a perfect score on the SAT and ranks in the top 15 of his class with a GPA of 4.46. He is also an IB diploma candidate and ATMS scholar. He hopes to pursue a career in business or economics. Congratulations to both Shannon and Stephen for a job well done. And finally tonight, we would like to recognize Arman Kafajapur, Christy Fakarota, and T.R. Chen Wong from Arroyo Vista Elementary School. Will you please come forward? These 3 students swept the inaugural Volunteer Center Orange County Martin Luther King Jr. Essay Contest, writing in response to the quote, "Everybody can be great because everybody can serve." Competing with more than 100 fifth grade students from 5 schools across the county, we are proud of their exceptional achievement. Armand took 3rd place in the competition with an essay focus on animal abuse. Christy placed 2nd in writing about pollution, and Tiara earned a 1st place recognition in the contest with an essay on poverty. All 3 of these students were awarded U.S. Savings Bond. Congratulations to these 3 Arroyo Vista students on their outstanding accomplishments.
Thank you. Before we begin our oral communications, the board would like to have a statement here, read a statement. Our school district has been forced to make budgetary cuts over the last few years. This has come with unpleasant consequences. Educational opportunities and support programs considered important have had to be scaled back or eliminated. Sadly, we have been deprived of the funding necessary to continue at our already reduced funding levels. The California legislature recently passed a budget which shorts us the funding we desperately need. We're going to have to cut another $25 million from our budget and fear it might even be more. This has placed us in a most unenviable position. The board is going to have to cut virtually every program not mandated by law. We will also be entering contract negotiations and the employee bargaining units of this district for the 2009-10 school year. Our ability to restore programs will be determined by what we are able to negotiate in the way of salary and benefits with our employees. Hopefully, we can negotiate contracts that will result in few employees being laid off and some programs being restored. This will require salary rollbacks since roughly 85% of our general fund goes to labor expenses. CUSD personnel did not experience salary rollbacks this year like so many in the private sector. In fact, this evening we are voting on the 08-09 pay increase for step and column and health and benefits. California is in a dire financial situation. Unemployment has passed 10%, with the income of those working often being substantially reduced. We can't delude ourselves into thinking we will be immune to the crisis surrounding us. However, we have every confidence in the parents, students, faculty, and staff of this wonderful district. We can get through this, but it will require everyone's effort. Many hands make for a light load. Thank you very much. We now move on to oral communications. We have many, many cards, and we have a 20-minute limit. So we have now, and we're taking the students first, so we have 1 minute each. Hopefully, the students can make themselves known in those 1 minute. Jordan, and we're starting now, Jordan Lazar, followed by Dylan Benson, and Deborah McKee. Mr. Lazar?
Good evening. No one can argue the importance of extracurricular activities in high school. Whether you're on the basketball team or the chess club, students need to organize interests outside the classroom. There is no disputing that, as a whole, sports help keep kids out of trouble. I would argue a child's involvement in sports is just as important as classwork. Athletics teaches camaraderie, diversity, and pulling together for the greater cause. It stresses team rather than oneself. Sports can also give a kid confidence to try other activities like the debate team, chess club, etc. For that matter, gain the confidence to talk to you tonight. High school sports give some kids a reason to hope, a reason to continue to come to school, and a big reason to excel academically, knowing that their time on the field or court is tied to their success in the classroom. For some kids, playing sports professionally is a goal that will be taken away should you vote to cut athletics from the budget.
Thank you. Thank you. Dylan Benson, followed by Deborah McKee and Lisa Mardak.
Good evening.
Good evening.
As a student in the Capital Unified School District, for 11 years, I have been exposed to many different conflicting emotions due to what I have seen. Over the time, and especially in this year, Capital Unified faces many problems it has not before been made to face. The proposal of removing funding from high school students in athletics is absolutely absurd, and only absurd. This board has promised over the years and made a vow to all children that they will be only acting for the greater good and for students. I only asked tonight because I thought I was going to get 3 minutes. Yeah. That any individual of this age will not be forsaken by this board, so we can cherish the glory of youth and continue the pursuit of education for years to come, instead of corruption and things that we don't need to worry about, basically. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Deborah McKee, followed by Lisa Mardak and Robin Hervey.
Hello, my name is Deborah McKee. I've been an involved parent in CUSD ever since my daughter started kindergarten 10 years ago. I want to voice my concern about a trend that has been developing that is very disturbing to me. I was going to talk about the district website, and it was disturbing to me about having a cross as the picture on top of the mission on the opening page, but that's already been corrected, so I appreciate whoever corrected that. However, an even more disturbing trend an email that I received with a flyer from several people in our district. This flyer was asked us to join parents, teachers, administrators, students, and CUSD supporters for a CUSD prayer rally. The flyer contained only one prominently displayed religious symbol, a cross, and several quotes from the New Testament. In microscopic writing, they stated it was not sponsored by CUSD. However, I have also, it became a greater concern to me when one of the board members, Trustee Maddox, Acts. Use the Prayer Rally is the title of his Ken for Our Kids blog entry. This is not a personal blog, but in his own words, a blog dedicated to the CUSD family. I was very hurt by this, and I want you to know that there are non-Christian people of faith and of non-faith that are part of your CUSD family, and I hope you would address us and our needs in the future.
Thank you. Lisa Mardak, followed by Robin Herbie and Frank Larkin.
There is one significant issue that the recall trustees have identified for reform in CUSD that we all can agree on, the method of electing the board trustees. That would be to elect candidates by trustee area instead of current at-large voting procedures. For example, currently the parents in Mission Viejo and Santa Margarita could vote for whom they feel is best candidate, only to have the voters from Laguna Niguel override their decision, making by voting for a different candidate that they know little about or who may not have had a chance to visit all the schools in Mission Viejo and Santa Margarita. This is wrong and must stop. Your campaign literature and recall website have clearly outlined your collective position that voting by trustee area is the only fair and reasonable way that each trustee is held accountable to its constituents. Yes, this is a problem that all of you can fix right here, right now, by placing on the agenda a resolution to this effect in April's meeting. Let's start bringing our district together and act on your plan. Increase visibility, local control, and board accountability to the parents and students of CUSD. Since the already overcommitted and overworked district staff are hard at work on the educational goals that you have set forth, a draft copy of the resolution language will be provided to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your quick acting.
Thank you. Mr. Herbie?
Thank you, President Adonazio, members of the board. Good evening. My name is Robin Hervey, and I've been a member of the CUSD family since 1988 as a block music teacher. Welcome to Music in Our Schools. March is Music in Our Schools Month. It's a nationally recognized program, and I'd like to show you a video right now which highlights a recent CUSD honor choir and orchestra performance just in this past week. It captures only a snapshot. Band plays tomorrow, and time did not allow their inclusion, but we do want to thank Mr. Sanabi and his capable videography class from Newhart Middle School for the production of this very, very short piece.
Thank you.
Mr. Larkin? Martha McNicholas, followed by Robin Rykoff and Leo Riley.
Hi, my name is Martha McNicholas. I'm a freshman at Dana Hills High School. I've been involved in the school at the site level, helping develop the needs assessment conducted last year, and I anxiously have awaited the facilities master plan, which I believe was anticipated last fall. There's been a lot of things that happened since then and now, but I wanted to say, as of last Monday's special meeting with the facilities, I would like to commend the architects at WILC for their wonderful presentation that made everything very clear and visually understandable, so you could see which campuses and which groups have which problems. They assessed everything with related to ADA compliance with joint use facilities and against current standards for new construction. And I think that was a very, very great presentation, pulling together thousands of pieces of information that have been collected over the last year. And the staff can give together recommendations, as can WLC, but it's really up to you to prioritize those needs. I just wanted to say thank you to WLC. And one more thing. I think it's bad planning to make such a small room for your boardroom. What happened here? Can't you outlook these needs?
Thank you. Robin Rakoff, followed by Leo Riley and Eddie Ortega.
Good evening. I'm Dr. Robin Rakoff and Dr. Julie Ryan, and I'm going to try to do this in a minute instead of three. But we're here to make you aware of a situation that's occurring within the Special Education Department, who in the past few years have gone to great lengths to try to find people to evaluate children who have vision problems, and they are going outside of the code of education and are not using qualified individuals to evaluate students with vision problems. And what we would like to request is that you investigate this and look further into what is going on in the special education in this area. We have also brought for each of the members a book to add to your private library. And in this book, there are two chapters that I would like to ask you to look at. One is related to vision and its importance in the learning process, and the other one is a chapter on dyslexia and the important vision plays in reading, and would like to make us available to work with the special ed staff and psychologists in this area.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for coming forward.
Mr. Riley, followed by Eddie Ortega and Jennifer Sonier.
Members of the board, my name is Leo Riley. I'm the general manager of a homeowners association in Nagel Shores, and I'm here before you tonight on an administrative matter that's not nearly as exciting as the other issues that you have here. And I was instructed to bring this to you. There was a handout here, and it has to do with the developer fees that are involved in new construction. The association has replaced an office building in 2007. We posted the fees, and when we went through the computation of the fees, we found that the fees were overstated and should have been credited back, having only have to pay for the increase in the square footage of the office building. We're doing the same thing now with a clubhouse and going through the same process, so I simply need you to review this, the policy that the board passed in 07, which is an explanation of the legislature on these developer fees. So all the documents are here. What happened then and now. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ortega, followed by Jennifer Sonier and Mark Bush.
Members of the board, my name is Eddie Ortega, and I'm here thanks to a program that you have here in the adult education. As a result of them, I actually finished my education as of Friday, obtaining my GED.
Congratulations.
I just need to express the importance of this program. Myself, I'm 40 years old, and I was laid off of work recently. I needed something to look forward to, something to focus on, something to help me to get through that time, make me feel better about myself. If it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't have done it. What would I have done if this program was not in place? What would other adults do? I think it's important because there's so many of us that want to take that step back towards getting that education, but are afraid. What do we do? Are we going to fit in? Am I not going to fit in? The staff there and the teachers have been so helpful, so encouraging, to the point where when I did the first part of my testing, my grades were outstanding, which, of course, I felt bad because I'm thinking I should have done this so long ago. But thank God I did it now. So I just hope that you take that into account. There's a lot of people like myself that are out there that are needing this, and this is a very important program. Thank you for your
time. Thank you, Mr. Ortega. Jennifer Sonier, followed by Mark Bush and Lume Sherpa.
Hello. First, I'd like to say thank you for getting my last name right. That doesn't happen very often. I'm here to support the adult education system, the adult education program. I am enrolled. I'm a high school student. I'm doing this program because I have a 14-year-old daughter that is going to be in high school next year. And I want to prove to her, show her that continuing your education, getting your high school diploma is so important that my life, because I have not had my high school diploma, I have not been able to get good jobs. I have not been able to succeed. So I am getting my high school diploma to show her and her friends that the diploma and education is very important in today's society. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming forward. Mark Bush, followed by Lume Sherpa and Barb Hokesong. Mr. Bush.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam President, trustees, teachers, staff, and students of the CUSD School District. My name is Mark Bush, and I am a computer teacher in the Capo USD Adult School. I would like the board to know that with regard to the matter of whether or not to close the adult school, I feel very strongly that you should reconsider this idea. In the 2.5 years I've been at the adult school, I've been privileged to be a part of the finest group of teachers, administrators, and students I've ever worked with during my 8 years in education. If there's any way that you can possibly find a way to continue offering classes to our community, especially our adult learners, it would be of tremendous value to our most important asset, our students who live in the community, who voted you into office and entrusted you with the job of providing high quality, low cost adult education to our CUSD community residents. Please know that many of our teachers, staff, and students feel the same way as our many letters and emails attest to. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Ms. Sherpa?
Well, good evening. My name is Mary Caravallo. I'm the citizenship teacher for Adult A, and I'm here to introduce my former student, Lume Jepa.
Oh, Jepa.
Thank you. My name is Lume Jepa. I am a student at Capistrano Abdul School. I came to the United States from Albania in 2003 and knew that I would have to learn English to reach my goal of becoming a United States citizen. I came to the Abdul School with my husband and daughter, and we all registered for citizenship class. We studied with teacher Mary Caravallo for 6 months, and we all passed our naturalization interview the first time. We are so proud. We are so proud to be United States citizen. My husband and I continue studying English in the evening in the advanced class, and we are learning more and more every day. Learning English has helped us to be more successful in this country. We have so much more confidence now. I am so happy that we have the opportunity to study at the Abdul School. It has really helped us to reach our goal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Hokesong, followed by Surfo Tao. hurting these names. Ms. Kehlani Conroy and Alan Wickstrom.
I am Barb Hoeksang, and I am a teacher in the adult school, and I am here to share with you some of the good work that the adult school is doing as you deal with these difficult financial decisions. I work in two areas of the adult school. I work at the Capo Valley High School Learning Center, which is a center for students, juniors and seniors, who have failed classes, and they can come in after school independently and make up those classes. We have those learning centers in all the high schools, and it allows those students to be able to graduate on time with their class. They do this after their full day of work, or perhaps it keeps them from dropping out of school. I also teach adult basic education, and my classroom is like a little United Nations with people from many different countries who are either trying to finish their diploma and get their GED, or are there to improve their English and become a citizen. As you make these difficult decisions, I hope that you will consider that for many students, the adult school is their only opportunity and helps to make them a better contributing citizen in society.
Thank you. Serfo Tao?
I would like to introduce Serfo, who is one of my students also.
Yes. Welcome.
My name is Serfo Tho. I'm married and I have two kids. I'm a Korean person from Myanmar, Southeast Asia. Because of the civil war in our country, I moved to Thailand refugee camp. I lived 18 years in the camp. On June 12, 2008, I moved to the U.S. I need to learn a lot of things to be a successful person in this country. I am a student at Capistrano Adult School. I'm learning English computer skill, and I take AB class to prepare myself for a GED post-test and get a certificate. I need that to get a good job. The adult school had helped me a lot. I have learned how to speak, write, read, and how to communicate with the community. If possible, I want this school to continue. I don't want this school to stop. If this school stops, it will be very hard for people like me. I ask you, please help me and help people like me to continue this school. May God bless you all and thank you all.
Thank you. Ms. Kehlani Conroy, followed by Mr. Alan Wickstrom.
Okay, you guys got me under that gun. I was going to actually compliment you, but I had to cut it. I'm just gonna start real quick. I would like to just make some suggestions, and I'm not being facetious. I believe we've had about 8 special board meetings since the superintendent was put on leave, and I've been to every one but one. And I know they're costly. I'm wondering if there's any way that we can we could shorten those or make them less often. I know you have a lot on your plate. But also, I heard recently that every board meeting is catered. And what is the cost of that? If that's the case, I'm standing here. I will volunteer to cook dinner for you guys. And if you guys don't like my cooking, I'll put some parents in charge. But if that would possibly save some money to go towards the teachers, I would do it. I'm willing to do anything to keep our teachers, like Alana Brewer photo at San Clemente High. I brought you some of her pictures. You guys got the gist of it.
Thank you. Mr. Wickstrom. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Alan Wickstrom. I'm Foundation President of South Orange County School of the Arts, an arts academy inside of Dana Hills High School. Tonight I'm coming for two explicit purposes: to address the trustees in regards to our capital campaign. We know that we've been charged with attempting to try to raise $4 million for the new theater over at Dana Hills High School. To date, we've raised about $15,000. The economy has been very challenging, and all the large benefactors out there are definitely on a holding pattern at the current time. What I'd also like to ask in my last 30 seconds is ask the trustees for access to the new drawings that came from WLC Architects. Right now we don't have access to those, and we do have people asking how the new theaters are going to look, so I'd like to make an official request to the board to receive access and also be able to dialogue with WLC directly. Obviously with your permission would be wonderful. And in my last 5 seconds, I'd like to invite you to our Opera Night Gala at the Marriott Laguna Cliffs Resort. It'll be March 29th at 6 p.m. We'll silent auction. We'll raise quite a bit of money there as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wickstrom. That ends our oral communications. We now have a public hearing on agenda item number 4. I declare the public hearing is now open regarding the approval of CUSD CELPA annual service plan and budget. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board? I do have a card, a blue card, from someone wishing to address special ed. They say it's item number 3. Are they wishing to address the CELPA issue? Yes. Please come forward, Ms. Wertheim.
Good evening. The importance of having a complete educational experience can't be understated. We attend Barcelona Hills. I invite you all to come and find out the gem of a school that this is. Not only does it provide a community feeling, parent involvement, and a fabulous opportunity for all the students, but it has such a great heart. We want you to know about the Barcelona Hills Collaboration Program. This is a program that brings together the typically developing students with those students that are placed in a special day class. The change that we have seen in our own family has been amazing. I have one child that's in the SDC part of it, and the other child is in the mainstream part of the class in a different grade. And nothing can compare to the experience that they've had. One of our children started reading in first grade at 6 words per minute. I'm thrilled to tell you that most recently we had our Woodcock Johnson scores back, and he received a superior rating with 134 words per minute as a second grader. A huge transformation in just 2 years. I attribute that to the leadership that Kathy Kurtz provides, Mrs. Brown, particularly Ms. Gear, our SDC teacher, as well as Mrs. Gilpin, Ms. Mackey, and the entire team there at Barcelona Hills. Please come find out what a great opportunity this is for our students. It is not only an educational opportunity that is worthwhile, but it fiscally makes sense. It reduces the amount of additional services that these children need because they're making a difference right there in the classroom. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments on item number 4? At this point, the public hearing is closed. Do we have a motion to approve by the board? Do we have a second? Any comments by the board? Questions by the board? Roll call, please. Ms. Bose.
Trustee Britt. Trustee Bryson.
Trustee Bryson.
It's an A or nay. Yeah.
A or nay? That's a yay.
Trustee Palazzo.
Yes.
Student advisor Chase Ishii. Trustee Christensen. Trustee Maddox?
Aye.
Trustee Winston?
Aye.
President Adonisio?
Aye. Can we have clarification on Trustee Brick's, who stated he was present? Is that an aye, Mr. Brick, or yes, it is an aye. The item passes 7-0 for adoption of the Capistrano Unified School District Education Local Plan Area CELPA Annual Service Plan and Budget. Thank you very much. We now move on to the remainder of our consent calendars. Does any board member wish to pull any item?
Yes.
Trustee Palazzo.
Number 2, 6, 10, 11, 15.
2, 6, 10, 11, 15. Any other board members wish to pull anything? So now we have, with the exception of 2, 10, 11, and 15,
6, also the summer school.
2, 6, 10, 11, and 15.
We have the rest of the consent calendar, items 1 through 31. We have a motion to approve the remainder. We have a second. Thank you. Roll call, Ms. Bowes.
Trustee Brick.
Here.
Is that an aye? Thank you.
Trustee Bryson.
Aye.
Trustee Palazzo.
Aye.
Student Advisor Chase Ishii.
Aye.
Trustee Christensen.
Aye.
Trustee Maddox.
Aye.
Trustee Winston.
Aye.
President Adonisio.
Aye. Thank you. Item number 2, school board meeting schedule. Trustee Palazzo.
I still would like to move to have 2 meetings a month.
You're wishing to amend this to include 2 meetings a month?
Correct.
Motion to amend. I second. Any discussion?
Respectfully, 2 meetings a month generates a lot of work for staff to get ready for meetings. We have pushed staff pretty hard anyway. I'd say the economy and just the general nature of our state, our county, our country is requiring that we all push ourselves pretty heavy. So there's that issue. If we're always getting ready for a meeting, it's going to be hard to get work done. There's the issue of public participation and attendance at these meetings. It's hard enough for those who want to attend and follow what's going on with the school district at the school board meetings to attend 1 a month, plus the potpourri of workshops and special meetings that we seem to have, especially during the budget crisis. It's another burden for the trustees and those of us who have full-time careers or businesses and families. So I'm going to be voting no for all those reasons.
Any other comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Do we need a second? I seconded it.
Okay.
I second the motion. So let's see. Trustee Palazzo.
Aye.
Trustee Brick.
Aye.
Trustee Maddox.
Aye.
Okay. Trustee Bryson.
Aye.
Trustee Christensen.
I'm just wondering if I could possibly amend this, although we're already in vote.
What do you want to amend it to?
Well, I can see the reason for having 2 meetings a month for a short period of time until we resolve the superintendent issue. And I'm wondering if perhaps we could have a deadline on that tied to something.
You want to amend it to include the rest of the year? Is that what you're saying? Now we're changing the... Sorry, you have to vote. Please stop. Please stop. We really are at the voting stage. We're at the voting stage.
Okay.
Trustee Winston?
No.
Adonisio? Yes. Did we lose that? Yes, we did. Once again. So, we have a motion to let this go as it is now. Well, it's changed, so now we have to accept it as it is. Do we have a motion to approve item number 2? Wait a minute. 1, 2, 3. It just rolls through. Item number 6.
That was the summer schools, which
summer school
was confusing.
because you started with one, and then what is the change for the 209? I'm seeing the little paragraph there that talks about 208, and you had 14 elementary, 4 middle, 4 high school, but what is it for 09? How many elementary, how many middle, and how many high school? Because the chart was confusing of Arroyo Vista Middle, it was confusing. So I'm just curious to know what the change was.
Trustee Palazzo, I'm going to have Ms. Benham address that, but we did revise this item and reposted it since last week, and so Ms. Benham is going to explain to trustees
okay.
the changes.
Thank you. And I've been confused as well, so let's work on this. Is a when the budget came out finally, it was put in the tier 3 flexibility category, the funds that we, or the way we fund summer school. So that means we have maximum flexibility with those dollars. So that happened after this item was already completed, the original one that you received. So we went back and we looked at that and said, is there a way that we can cut back further in order to not impact the regular year budget as severely? So what we did is we went from 17 proposed sites down to 12 proposed sites and further reduced the number of general education sites, the non-special education programs, reduced that to 3, proposed only 3 elementary sites, and those would be our program improvement schools, would have a general education program, 1 middle school site that's central to the entire district, and then 1 high school site for our 10th through 12th graders who are credit deficient or need to make up a grade. What that would do is allow students in general education programs from any of our schools in the district to attend, but they'd have to drive the distance to one of the few schools that was holding general education. The other sites would have special education only on their sites, and that is mandated the extended school year, so we don't have a lot of flexibility with that program. And so the cost now is $350,000 for the general ed.
That's our estimate of the cost versus the $1 million.
Although it is mandated, what is the cost of the special ed? But I realize that is mandated. Do we know that?
I do not have that figure. We'd have to get back to you.
We have a motion on this item to approve.
I have a question.
Mr. Winston.
I noticed that, if I'm reading your chart correctly, that for middle school students in San Clemente who have to attend summer school, they need to go to San Juan. Is that right?
Right. Any middle school student in general ed would have to go to San Juan. That's the most central, centrally located middle school that we have.
How has it occurred in the recent past years?
We've always had, well, the fewest middle school sites we've had are 4. We basically try and locate one in each region of our district. It's expensive. This school at Marco, we always have at least 250 to 350 students, so it sustains itself, whereas at some of our other middle schools, we have only 100 students, 120, and it's very costly to have a full staff for that.
Have you previously had summer school for middle school students in San Clemente?
Yes, we always have, until this year, had at least one site. We've had Bernice Air and Shorecliffs or Bernice Air and Vista Del Mar until a few years ago, and then last year we had just one site in, I believe it was Shorecliffs last summer.
How many students from San Clemente on average, if there is an average, go to summer school?
I would have to look at those numbers. I don't have them in front of me.
And what about the high schools?
We have, for the past several years, I don't remember which governor gave us mid-year cuts last, but during that episode, we cut back on our high school summer school program, and we have had, for the last several years, only one campus for our 10th through 12th graders who needed to make up courses.
District-wide?
Right. And that rotates, so it's Dana Hill's turn to host.
Okay.
They had several years off while we were building the science buildings.
Do you have a general sense of how many students attend summer school district-wide?
I did have that number, yes. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me. I believe I don't have that number, so I don't want to guess.
And I take it whatever this recommendation is, it's less than we spent last year and less than the year before that?
Right. Last year we spent $1 million, and this year we think, with the school, based on the enrollment that we had left, this is just general ed, but based on the general ed enrollment at these sites last year, increasing a few students for parents who are willing to drive their students to those schools, this would be the cost. And we get reimbursement through our supplemental programs, but that's one of the categoricals that's put into Tier 3. So we are getting some money, more than this amount, to cover this, but the excess can be used for our regular school year, and that's why we're trying to cut back on what we use during summer.
And which category does summer school fall into, mandated or not?
It is the only, for extended school year, for our special ed, it is mandated. For our general ed, the only students that we have to serve in summer school are students receiving Title I funding through the Migrant Education Program. It's a very small number of students in our district, but most of them go to some of the sites that we are proposing.
I wish we were provided with more information on what you're asking us to approve here in terms of numbers of students and how we're spending the money. But I see your dilemma. Thank you.
Do we have a motion to approve this?
I so move.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Move on to item number 10, Ms. Palazzo. Trustee Palazzo?
I just had a question about the fees. On page 114, it says, the housing tract developer has agreed to improve the sewer line as long as there is financial commitment from the school. Do we have that in writing from the developer? I always like to see things in writing. Do we have that, or is that just...
I'm sorry, please say again.
I'm sorry. On page 114 in the agenda, it's regarding the engineering fees that we are now required to spend for the San Juan Hills High School, or being asked by the city.
You're referring to the page 2 of that letter.
Yes, about the housing tract developer has agreed to improve the sewer line as long as there is financial commitment from the school.
Yes, that is correct. We are in partnership with the homeowners.
And we have this in writing.
Yes, through our agreement.
Thank you.
Yes.
Would you care to move approval?
Move.
Do we have a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The item carries 7-0. Number 11, Mrs. Trustee Palazzo.
Well, I was just noticing that this consulting firm wouldn't take a decrease in their contract, yet the next, their auditors would. So I just wanted to be sure, did we make effort to get them to lower their fees? You know, and with this economy, everybody's chipping in.
I was looking for our purchasing director to find out what communication she had with them.
There is a letter here.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, there is a letter here.
And they just said no.
Well, their pricing was from 2004, so
okay.
They haven't increased their prices since 2004.
And this for, okay. All right. Thank you.
Do we have a motion to approve item number 11?
I so move.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The item carries 7-0. Item number 15.
Okay, I had a question on this about, if we come up with a new contract, is this part of the collective bargaining, the vision, dental, is that, I know it's not part of MEVA, but again, does it go to collective bargaining if we choose a new company, or do we do it in connection with the collective bargaining units?
Thank you for the question, Trustee Palazzo. No, the consultant would not be part of the bargaining unit or the bargaining process.
So the board chooses, or you bring the information and the board chooses?
Yes, it's a two-step process. Okay. This is just asking permission to go out to bid, then we come back with a recommendation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If the consultant provides us something that economically looks like something we want to present to the collective bargaining units as an alternative to MEBA, is that the next step of the process?
No, this would be separate from a discussion about MEBA. This would be just dealing with these benefits of dental, vision, life insurance, and disability. So MEBA is a separate entity dealing with medical benefits. This is the other component of CUSD's benefit package.
Okay, the way you've written this in terms of looking for an experienced medical benefits consulting service seems like it's broader than what you just described.
I apologize for that.
Okay, so this is everything but MEBA.
That's correct.
If I could just add, Trustee Winston, as we presented to the trustees previously, the MEBA components are just the medical benefits, and that's covered in that area. So we didn't maybe clarify that enough in the item, but that is the way that the MEBA works. The MEBA is negotiable because we shared with you the contracts at one of our last meetings that all of the employee units have signed to be part of the MEBA agreement, which provides the medical benefit piece. These other benefits are not under the auspices of MEBA, dental, vision, life.
And to follow up on Trustee Palazzo's line of questioning, if we wish as a board to look for alternatives to the MEBA program, we have to first float that or sunshine that with the unions?
Correct. That would be part of the bargaining process, is that we would have to leave the MEBA, we would have to have those conversations with our employee groups.
And could we get consultants and look at pricing first?
I would not advise that.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Do I have a motion to approve item number 15?
I so move.
Do I have a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The item carries 7-0. That concludes our consent portion. We move on to discussion action, item number 32. Mr. Leves.
Madam President, members of the board, this item was originally requested by Trustee Bryson several months ago related to our refuse services. And so who we have with us this evening is Phil Hillman from Vavrinic Trine & Day, who conducted the audit on our garbage services, reviewed the contracts and the request for proposal process. And so as he steps to the microphone, then he'll be able to address this as well as any questions you might have.
Good evening, Madam President, Board of Education, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I have some prepared remarks, but given the length of the agenda, I thought what I'd just do is tell you, I think you've got a copy of the report, you've had it in your hands, and if you have any questions or comments on the report, I'd be more than happy to address those here.
Trustee Bryson, welcome.
Yes. Actually, I have quite a few questions. For 2 years, I have sought, for the benefit of the children in this district, to get a clarified, transparent accounting of our trash hauling services. And after taking a look at the analysis here and the auditing report,
I absolutely personally feel that the qualifications that were inserted in the original request have not been met. What we have here, and I will go through my thinking from 2 years ago to this minute very rapidly as to why I personally feel that this report simply does not benefit the interests of the children for whom every dollar is at stake here. I asked and had them pull before actually Mr. Lebs came, and then they were pulled for my inspection, a complete series of all of the trash hauling receipts to the dump. This was the whole heart and part of the request that I've made for 2 years, to get clarification of what was being dumped, what was being paid to the hauler, and why nothing was coming back to our district from the recycling, both in the plastics, paper, and everything else. I also was very concerned at that time because I was given information not by your firm, but from someone who is no longer here, actually, that we had been in compliance, when actually we have not been in compliance. Every time there is a new contract for hauling, as a state entity and a municipality, we are supposed to have it audited in the interests of the children and students in this district. We are supposed to be assured from day one that every single dime due the children has been returned, and there should be a recycling funding stream coming back. Point one.
Ms. Bryson, I'm sorry. Can I just address that real fast?
Yeah.
I probably should have said this at the beginning. The scope of this review was pretty limited, and I say that...
That is where I have my question. I cannot understand why you were given a limited scope, because the scope was set very specifically by this board to include those hauling receipts. And although it may not be your fault that you weren't given the correct request at that point, I'm not sure where it lies, but this does not address the needs of the children of this district.
Right, and I understand what you're saying, and maybe we could clarify the scope a little bit more. Basically, our audit was more, and actually it wasn't an audit, it was a review of the bidding process and the invoices and how they related to the bidding process. The performance of the contractor, for instance, would not have been included in this.
Well, that is where I have an extreme problem,
right.
And I regret that you were not given the correct instruction. And I have to put my caveats in here right now.
Sure, and I totally understand.
Number one, the first caveat is that those trash receipts, which were gathered for my inspection, and I candidly relinquished the right to investigate those receipts personally when I was assured that that would be part of the audit and the board voted to make it part of the audit process. Now, what happened between the requests of the board and its implementation by you is unfortunate, because this document, all it shows is that Capistrano Unified School District pays its bills. It does not address how the needs of the children were taken care of by the trash hauler. I have investigated many, many other districts, both here and in the state. They use Excel spreadsheets. They use an open bidding process. Apples to apples are always compared. The age of the trucks is compared. The amount of pickup is compared. The stream of money coming back to our students, which could be in the hundred thousands of dollars, ladies and gentlemen, is never laid out. And when this contract was open in the last bidding cycle, it was opened off-site. In other words, it was open before it came to the board, when we are supposed to have bids contractually opened in front of the public and published on our website. I am really extremely unhappy with the lack of the openness and transparency, and that the request made by this board to be delivered to you, in all fairness to you, the scope you were given was within the work you would be doing. The scope given to you was not adequate. And it is of extreme importance to me that the board seriously consider tonight the opening of this question again, that we ask for, I would like to specifically be the person involved with making sure that the scope of work done covers in the approved proper manner Excel spreadsheet every single documented thing all the way down, because our children need, deserve, and must have the money stream that they should have been accruing from the haulers from the beginning of day one 2 years ago when I requested it to this very minute, and we still don't have that transparency. Here are some of the things I would like to see. If they implement, if the board approves, a consideration next month to do a proper, what I consider a proper structured audit. We would like to list each school venue, location, number of bins at the school venue, number of recycling bins, pickups per week for each bin. This ensures the apple-to-apple collection. Further, we would like the Excel spreadsheet, which I've mentioned several times, which will show, and we can put it on, it will show exactly what is offered by the different haulers. Then moving on down there, I would like plans for the headquarters to include the roll-off boxes. Okay. I also want the pricing and the bidding documents to be opened here in front of the public. Because when it's opened away from the public eye, that is a transgression against the public's right to know and proper process and to assure that no one has prior information until it is opened in the public eye. These are things that go to the heart of proper functioning for our district. I want to make sure that the vehicles used are using the most modern alternative fuel possibilities for the vehicles that are used, and that they are new enough to protect the environment and our children who are breathing the air where these vehicles are constantly in action. In the state and at the state level, bid documents show the date and the time when they will be publicly opened so that everyone here and at home has a right to come and hear the bidding. This is critical to the open procedure. And the last time it was opened off-site, and people came in here and told us exactly that it had been awarded, and there was no transparency, which was very disturbing. And the bottom line for me is, where does it show in those documents the rebate stream from the recycling coming back to our school district for our children? These are things I would like to request of the board, that we reject the audit as it stands, that we come back next month, and I would like to ask for additional work by your firm, to scope of work to expand and include the proper things. Because for a few thousands of dollars, we could be looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars in stream. And it should be approached in a completely open, across-the-board, Excel spreadsheet manner with the same state bid requirements.
Trustee Bryson, I understand your concerns. The item is not for approval. However,
I ask that the trustees not approve it as it stands,
that
we consider at the next board meeting.
Okay. It's not up for approval, so that part is fine. Trustee Winston?
Discussion action. It's under discussion action.
Information discussion. Trustee Winston.
Good evening. Am I reading your report correctly in that you did sample the way the district is being charged and you found some inconsistency between the invoices and the contract?
Yes, that's correct.
And those inconsistencies varied but totaled as much as 4% for some months?
Correct.
And have you extrapolated that over the life of the contract to see what the potential loss is?
Well, I didn't. And the reason why is we sampled, to be cost effective, and maybe this doesn't address Ms. Bryson's issue, but to be cost effective, we wanted to look to see if there was going to be cost effectiveness for us to be out here doing a review of a large magnitude. So when we got in, the records for the invoices in particular are pretty detailed, 10-15 pages long for each. So rather than go through every invoice that we had for the entire period of the contract, we sampled 3 months and came up with the inconsistencies that you had noted. We compared those invoices to what was bid in the published bid and board documents that was approved by the board, and identified that there were a handful of small differences, including a disposal fee, which we weren't sure where that lay in the contract, and that was one of the follow-up questions for Mr. Lebs. There were a couple of follow-up items with these small discrepancies that we had regarding that.
What's the annual spend on disposal under this contract?
$350,000 to $375,000.
Okay. And did you see any reason to believe that the contractor is receiving recycling fees?
Well, I didn't see that. That's the first I've heard of that. And I did not see that in the invoices themselves. So that's something that, if we wanted to add that to the scope, we certainly could. Part of the performance side of it, of the contractor, we relied on the maintenance and operations department. When they get an invoice for refuse services, it's approved by them and sent up to the accounts payable department to pay. So I think there was a fair amount of reliance that the performance of the contractor was being looked at by the maintenance and operations department.
Does this contract cover every school?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Maddox?
This may, perhaps is a question then best posed to staff. Is just my familiarity with waste contracts deals primarily with municipalities, and oftentimes the contract factors in the anticipated recyclables and it actually reduce the amount charged by that charged to the municipality based upon their anticipated recyclables if they're meeting the goals set by the government. They're required of recyclables when they go through the dirty mirror. So if feel free to chime in.
I have other things that I need to say before you address it, Ron, and then you can address all of it, if I may. Number one, I believe a year ago almost, we had a facilities board meeting. Ellen, I believe you were there. And also, Larry, I believe you were there, if I'm not mistaken. When we had a representative who is no longer with the city of San Juan Capistrano, a city manager, come here and tell us that we had to accept this contractor because they said so. And I told them at the time, the trustees of Capistrano Unified don't have to take that from any city. We are ourselves a municipality and a state entity, and we will make those decisions ourselves. But I was somewhat less than pleased that idea that another entity could impose on us the best decisions for our children, legally they had no right to even make that statement. Now, subsequently, that person is no longer with that city, but the attempt to strong-arm this board was very evident, and it is not the first time. So I am very concerned about a full look at how this has been moved and a full look at why we are not receiving a stream from the recycling as it has been done. And I remain very concerned. And although there were errors there, and I did see they fell within a 4% margin of error, but extrapolated into the region of recyclables, then it becomes a different issue. And also, I believe the haulers should state whether they own their own trucks or not.
Mr. Lebs, did you wish to respond? Mr. Winston?
Perhaps in your response, you could tell us what your plans are, if any, for what happens when this current contract expires this June, as far as putting it out for bid again.
I would like it to go out for bid again.
Well, There's quite a few questions there to answer. I think maybe what I could do is address the recycling question first. Chris Van Kuyken, who I don't believe is here this evening, is in charge of our recycling and energy management program. And if I'm not mistaken, recycling is handled completely separate from the refuse hauling services, is that they're collecting the recyclables separately. Those are being collected and then turned in. We have dumpsters at a number of the schools and things specifically for that, so it's not included within the contract to do the recyclables.
Then where in our budget is the stream of income from that identified?
I think Chris can better address that directly, since this is something he oversees. Right there, Chris.
Good evening. Sorry for the casual appearance. I was out in the lobby participating. So with regard to our contract, which over the past couple of years I've had some pretty thorough involvement with regard to recycling.
Excuse me, which contract with whom?
The CRNR.
So we are recycling through CRNR.
100% through CRNR.
Which is what my question was.
And Trustee Bryson, I could answer right here for you right now a few of your questions. There isn't a revenue stream that comes back to us from what CRNR collects in the white recycling dumpsters. That's factored. Their take from that is factored into our cost for our refuse per container.
That is not understandable to me. There should be a stream coming back to the students.
We certainly will look at that and address it gladly.
I think at this juncture what would be good is if we could sit down with you, Trustee Bryson, have you take a look at the process that we used before, take a look at some of the parameters and goals that you would like to set as we move forward. And then I think at this point, given the number of questions that exist, that we put this out for bid again as we go into the next fiscal year.
I would hope the trustees would feel that way.
I would like the opportunity to sit down with you so that we can go over and make sure that we've got an apples-to-apples comparison and RFQ or a request for proposal as we move forward.
Or expand the current would be fine also.
Yeah.
The contract itself needs to be rewritten to uphold better standards for the efforts that we want for our children.
We'd be happy to do all of that.
Trustee Winston.
If the marketplace supports turning trash to cash, I think that's a no-brainer. We all need to look at that and do that. Now, with respect to this audit report, it's not an action item. Is it going to come back for an action item? Are we being asked to approve it, or where do we go from here?
It's an information discussion item. There's no approval required.
Okay. Is the audit concluded? Are you looking for direction on what to do next?
At this point, what we were going to do was the questions that had been raised in the audit, the discrepancy, is take that back to the hauler, ask them for an explanation as to where that, why that took place, and where that lies within the contract. That was the next step we were going to do.
And who is going to do that, the auditor or staff?
Staff. Terry Fluen, our purchasing director, will do that.
Okay.
I still request, my initial request, that the trustees not accept this as it is presented so that it could be expanded properly and hopefully be looking down the road, the next board meeting, at the proper time to a potential reopening of bid to all haulers.
Okay.
Thank you. Item number 33, Consulting Services Engagement Letter.
Madam President, members of the board, this item is related to the investigation at the San Juan Hills High School into the construction contract as well as, into the purchase agreement and acquisition of the site. We've asked for a proposal from Vavrinic Trine and Day to review those transactions and to take a look to make sure that everything was done above board and in proper order. And Royce is here with us tonight from Vavrinic Trine and Day to address this as we bring this forward. And this was at the request of the board.
Thank you. Appreciate being here this evening. This is an engagement letter, as you can read, for management services. Be real clear that it specifies that it's non-audit services at this point, and it specifies the purpose of the engagement and the specific tasks that we would actually perform. So my participation here this evening is just to answer any questions you may have regarding this engagement letter.
Trustee Winston.
Why would someone engage you to do this audit? What's the end result that you would be trying to accomplish? And what, there's no fee estimate, no cap anyway, in this. Do you have a range of cost?
Well, in regards to your first statement, once again, this isn't an audit. It's management services. We're looking at, we're providing some information. We're providing some information for you to make your decisions on whether or not you want to pursue this in any fashion. For instance, you know, one of the terms that has been bandied about for quite some time is a forensic audit. Forensic audit typically leads to litigation. If you're going to go that avenue, then you really need to bring on your litigators, your legal counsel. They will ask for some specific information in order for them to make their decisions. This will assist you in whether or not you want to go that route. And once again, it's specific. It's, we're looking at site selection and acquisition, construction costs, designated construction costs, and designated consulting agreements. We are not, this agreement is not intended to identify whether or not there was, the management decisions that were made in the previous years was correct. It's just documenting the fact that these decisions took place and doing some analysis of those decisions. As far as
okay.
The cost?
Well, before you go to cost, why? I mean, it sounds to me, I read this, and I'm curious as much as anybody to know if things happened properly in the construction of that high school, but I think you're just repackaging information that we already have.
Well, go ahead.
Actually, that was the request of the board. The board had requested, due to tremendous amount of interest on the public's behalf and also on ours, as to certain transactions which might have occurred with regard to the purchase and development of the site. So basically, we went to the auditors and said, can you give us a hand on this? We need some additional procedures to ensure that all the transactions have been properly recorded in accordance with the agreements and contracts. And they have come back with this. So what my question is, and this is what we want, this is where we're going here, did we pay for, and I would like to know that the scope of these services will cover that, did we, the district, pay for services or development of land or any property that we don't own that we were not required to pay for, such as slope development? Did we pay for the development of a slope which was not ours and where we were not required contractually to develop? That has been going around quite a bit. There's a substantial amount of dollars, several million dollars that have been on people's minds, and we just want to really be able to get that out in front. So would that be covered here, that we know that all the dollars are contractually spent?
The difficulty in any of this work is, first off, this is areas of work that took place a number of years ago. In fact, I don't think any of your present board members were here for that decision, although that decision was made by the board at that time. We as your auditors and the management consultants doing this work, we don't have the ability to require anybody previous management to come in and speak to. We don't have subpoena power. That power comes through a criminal investigation. So that's why I say in relation to forensic audit, if that's where you want to go with this, that's where this is the avenue to start with it. But can I guarantee you that that's the outcome? I could not guarantee you that's the outcome. That in doing an analysis, we're going to clearly say that this should have been this way or this should have been that way without the ability to speak to anybody.
However, we compare all of our payments, our line item payments, to the contracts that are out there. We can certainly determine if we went ahead and paid for Slope A when Slope A was not on the contract to be paid for or developed.
Certainly.
It's either against the budget or in excess of
that
the budget.
That sort of analysis is easy by the paper trail. Absolutely. But once again, there's some subjectivity in saying should have been a cost of the district or should have been a cost incurred by the developer. We can't make that call on it. That's something that if it's specific within the contracts, we can say yes, it's a cost that's noted and delineated within the contract. Yes, it should have been a cost incurred by the district, but if it's not, so like I say, it's really a question of gathering information and providing that to you in order for you to decide to make your further decisions regarding this. And Board Member Winston, is in regards to the costs associated with this, I don't know how much documentation we're going to have to look at. If you need to have a cap on this, we can certainly do that, but typically these services are based on the amount of time that we spend in on it.
Is this even phase one, step one, in what would otherwise be known as a fraud audit?
I think it's definitely necessary to move forward with this. Like I say, with this information, I would strongly urge you to consider taking this, making your decision and taking this to your legal counsel if you believe that there is an avenue to proceed legally. We can't make that decision as independent auditors.
What would you need to do to give us either a cap or a range so we know what we're authorizing?
I would need to know the extent of the, for instance, if you're asking me to look at 1,000 different invoices or, what I'm saying is that that's the sort of information I need, because that way then I could factor into how much time we're actually going to spend reviewing this sort of documentation. If you're asking me to look at every single transaction for a 4-year period, that's quite a lot of time.
Trustee Bryson? When it comes to the slopes issue in this district, I believe you can recall Ellen and I requested a slope review right after we got elected 2 years ago, and I requested a slope review a year ago because I believe that the slopes are an issue that need to be looked at and how they were handled and how they were paid. So definitely, in my personal opinion, there is something that should be looked at very carefully there.
So for the board, Mr. Christensen, Trustee Christensen.
There's two aspects that I have questions on, and one is it's difficult, I understand, for your part, trying to figure out the cost of what it's going to be. And we would have no idea how much material is there and have to be dug up. So that's a difficult issue to get a handle on as far as going through an action item on this. The other thing is you had mentioned that you would primarily be providing us the data and wouldn't be making, decisions, because, you know, that's more of a legal term. But would you be presenting this data in some sort of a summary so that at least we could go through it and say, okay, here's an end result, and be able to pick that out?
Certainly. The deliverables that you would receive would be a report that addresses each of these. Now, once again, this is an engagement letter that, Mrs. Bryson, if you feel compelled to include other items, at this point, this is where we really need to have this discussion, because really what I don't want to do is have an outcome that we had from the previous presenter. We want to address the issues that specifically that you stated, and I think in all fairness that works best. So if we need to have further discussions to refine this to where you're comfortable with what you're asking for and we're comfortable in performing that work, then we're happy to have those discussions.
The scope of work needs to be looked at carefully.
Then we will pass on approval. You're recommending that we pass on approval, Trustee Bryson, until we review this again for additional comments. Thank you very much, Mr. Townsend.
Thank you.
Mr. Winston.
Your letter references following some OPSE form, SAB 50-06 standard.
Mm-hmm.
Are we as a government agency and you as an auditor for a government agency bound to do our audits by certain standards, or do we have some latitude in designing them?
In our performing this sort of work, we are bound by certain requirements. So I'm not sure when you say your audits.
Well, if the district decides to audit certain aspects of the high school construction project,
you're not bound by the same constraints, obviously, as we are.
Right, you have your professional duties.
Exactly.
Are we bound to follow certain government audit protocols? Because frankly, I'm not really enamored with the way our government lately has been doing its own audits. I wouldn't want to be constrained by them.
No, you wouldn't. On the other hand, once again, I mean, you're sitting in the same boat as we are, in the sense that request to speak to people who are no longer working here, that's their decision. Request to speak to the vendors who may have participated on these projects. Their willingness to comply is completely up to them. So, you know, there's that. That's a difficulty for both you and I in that regards.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Appreciate your time.
Item number 34, Mr. Libs.
This next item is related to the approval of our second interim financial report. And Corey brought the screen down, so we'll have the presentation up here in a second. I have just a few short slides that I'll move through rather quickly to kind of explain what it's about and where we sit this evening as we move forward with our budget development. Okay. The second interim report, it comes out of an education code requirement, 42130. There's two interim reports that are done. The first interim is for the period ending from July 1 through October 31st, and the second interim is for the period ending January 31st. And what it does is it takes your actual expenditures through that date, projects it through the end of the year, so that you can determine whether or not you're going to maintain fiscal solvency. Also included within that is projection for the two out years, the two subsequent years. So in this case, since we're talking about the current fiscal year we're in, 08-09, those two subsequent years are 9-10 and 10-11. What happens through this is the board certifies the report, and then the administration certifies that we've met our criterion standards, which are contained within the report, that we will be fiscally solvent for the next 2 years. The goal is a positive certification. In order to meet that, we've included within the current year the categorical flexibility, capturing that amount, that $9.45 million. And then in the subsequent years, we've identified a budget cut and instead of the line item of $25 million, which is what we've been talking about over the last several meetings. And then in the next year out, the second year, 10-11, if no adjustments are made, we'll need to cut an additional $10 million out of that year in ongoing expenditures to remain solvent in that two-year projection. So in order for the Orange County Department of Education to accept our report, they have to certify it to the state. They have a timeline, which is April 15th. So typically, we get this done by March 15th. We get our second interim done by March 15th, certified by the board. Then it goes to the county. They review it, make sure that they're in agreement with it, and then they forward that on to the state. So where we are is we need to commit to and make the cuts of the 25 and the 10 million. So I'll touch on that in a minute. But here's the definition of terms related to the different types of certifications. There's a positive certification, a qualified certification, and a negative certification. The positive certification is that the district believes it will meet its financial commitments for the current and two subsequent years. A qualified means that we may not. We're not sure that we would. And that you can self-qualify or the county can qualify after reviewing your books. And a negative certification would be determined that you will not be able to meet that. Those requirements. So as we look forward, into our budget development for 9-10, we need to identify and come up with that $25 million worth of cuts. And in order to do that, we have a couple of options how we can handle it. One is that the board and staff move ahead, and the staff identifies, works with the board, and the board approves cuts related to that amount by April 13th. And then we would have to identify the second level of cuts in the next out year by June 1st. The other option that we could take at this point is we could self-certify and determine that we may not make it, and that would buy us some time in going through this cut process. That would be a qualified certification. Then we would have until June 1st to do both groups of cuts. There's some downsides to qualified budget. I'll hit on those in a moment. But if option, just to go over these just real briefly, option one, which is what we're looking at, would be at this meeting we adopt the second interim report with a positive certification. The board takes formal action by April 13th on the $25 million that needs to be removed from the 09-10 budget. And then by June 1st, like I said, take action on the remaining $10 million in the subsequent fiscal year. If the board was to select option two, the board would approve a qualified certification for the second interim, and then by June 1st have to take action on both of those items. Then additional reporting requirements requirements come into play. It places an extra burden upon staff and throws into the mix a few more qualifications. One is we'd have to prepare a third interim report, which you don't normally have to do. But if our cuts are made, the qualified certification would be removed by the first interim report in 9-10, so it would stay with us through that process. There are impacts if we do a qualified certification. One is that if we issue any debt, and we typically issue a tax revenue anticipation note every year to help make cash flow, is that the Department of Debt would have to review and approve that prior to issuance. Also, any collective bargaining agreement that we would come to would have to be reviewed by the Department of Education 10 days prior to board approval, so there's an extra set of eyes looking over that. In addition, there's a list of a number of different oversight requirements that might come into play. I just listed a few of those, and that would be initial fiscal oversight and possibly a recovery plan if cuts weren't made by June 1st. Staff is encouraging the board, and the Department of Education from Orange County is encouraging the board to move ahead with a positive certification. So what I did is I developed two timelines here, and I'm not going to read through these, but in order to meet that timeline for the positive certification, we would need to add two additional board meetings in the month of March in order to get this work done. Those are shown there in yellow. All of this information will be posted on the web after the meeting, so it'll be up on the web tomorrow morning. And then if we were to select the second option, then we would have, this is the timeline I prepared for that, as well as there's some extra meetings that have been plugged in there that are shown in yellow.
Could you go back one slide?
That one. So what we're at, where we are right now, where we're here this evening, is recommending that the board would accept option one. We file our positive certification. We move forward and push ahead on getting this work done. We had initially thought we could take a little bit longer in doing it, but that turned out to not be the case. So we're open for if you have any questions. Christopher's here. If you would like to address any particular points within the second interim report itself, Pam Sneagle is back on the job after being out for a while. She'd be here available to. Yeah, answer any really in-depth details if you have questions related to that. With that, I'll turn it back over to the board.
Actually, I think the recommendation is excellent, and I would move that we go with the staff's recommendation for option one.
I'll second it. Discussion?
Ron, can you put that timeline for option one back on the screen while we're discussing it? Thank you.
Is that agenda number 34? I mean, the option one, option two vote.
Let me explain a little more in depth. The report was put together with the anticipation of a positive certification. After discussion with the Department of Education last week, we talked about what other options might we have that if we're having trouble moving forward as rapidly as we'd like to, that there's another option available. So we wanted to make that up. Yes, ma'am.
So are we voting on agenda 34, 35, or
no? What you'd be voting on is to accept the second interim report as presented, which includes a positive certification,
okay,
which would kick into play this timeline.
And that is agenda item 34. Or
yes, that is correct.
With the added. You're adopting option one of the.
Well, yes. In essence, that's correct. Where you would be adopting this timeline in order to make
that. And I'm just asking if that's legal to add that to the agenda. It's more of a procedural question that I have because I'm fine with option one. I want option one. I just want to be sure that. We are doing it correctly.
The scheduling of the additional board meetings can just be direction to staff.
Yes.
Okay.
It's an expansion of the item. Trustee Brick?
Ron,
yes, sir.
Let me ask you a question. You can, at least with staff, as you currently know the situation, will meet the option one.
We are prepared to hit the ground running tomorrow to begin compiling a list of cuts with the anticipation of hitting that $25 million by the April 13th meeting.
Thank you.
Trustee Winston?
And is there sort of a concurrent invisible timeline here tied to the May 19th special election? I mean, how does that impact what we would be doing?
I don't think that impacts us, what we're doing here, necessarily, because this timeline and this approval and comes into play before that happens. However, having brought that up, if the May 19th special election, if all the items do not pass on that, then I have a feeling the state's going to have to come back with some sort of revision mid-year next year, which is a bridge we'll cross when we get there.
Okay, so the timeline in option one really is what I think we've been working towards since November.
Correct.
And we haven't made the hard decisions yet, but you're telling us that here they are, we have deadlines now.
That is correct.
To make the hard decisions.
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please, Ms. Bowes.
Trustee Brick. Trustee Bryson.
Aye.
Trustee Palazzo.
Aye.
Student Advisor Chase Ishii.
Aye.
Trustee Christensen.
Aye.
Trustee Maddox.
Aye.
Trustee Winston.
Aye.
President Adonisio.
Aye. The motion passes. Option one. Item number 35, 0809, 910, budget discussion. Question and answer.
Well, over the past several weeks, we've had a number of presentations where we've been discussing the budget and the challenge that lies ahead. I just have a couple of comments. I don't have a presentation this evening, but what I wanted to convey and maybe reiterate is that this budget situation that we're faced with here is of no fault of our own. This has been put upon us by the state. I think it's important to realize that over the past several years that staff and the board have done a very difficult, arduous task of carving millions of dollars from the budget in order to get to the point to be ready to do this, which is being thrust on us by the state. There is a great sense of urgency in this process. It's very difficult. It's going to be very challenging. And at this point, looking at what we're faced with, which is not different than what most districts throughout the state are being faced with at this point, is the same type of percentage cut in their budget. We have some hard work to do. While this wasn't our fault, it's up to us to solve, and we're committed to doing that. And as we move forward, staff will be working very diligently on this, and as we're able to schedule the meetings, we'll get the work done over the next couple of weeks. But what we wanted to do, or what I would like to do with this board agenda item this evening, is it's not on for action. I simply thought it would be good, and then talking over with President Adonisio, was to have an opportunity for the board to discuss among themselves or ask questions of staff or kind of frame some direction as we move forward, just to have an opportunity for some dialogue. We really haven't had that chance. So that's what this was about this evening, was to give the board a chance to do that.
Thank you. We do have some blue cards. Trustee Bryson.
Just briefly, in the budget work that I've looked at, is there any way, without adding more onus to the staff, to group by school, total cuts by school in every arena, so that we can get an idea of any school that may be bearing more than its fair share of the equitable burden here?
I'll have to go back and take a look at that with staff. That might become rather difficult, given the magnitude and the broad reach and scope of what we're looking at. That's a good point. Go ahead.
I was just saying there's also a different level of categorical funding for the different sites, depending if they're Title I, depending how much school improvement money they have, and gifted money as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Susan.
If I could just, President Adonisio,
yes.
Before you start with the speakers, I know you have several. We did get the numbers for summer school, Mr. Winston, and this was one of the recommendations that was made, as Ms. Benham said earlier, to go from 17 sites to 12 was because of this fiscal situation. And it's a way to recapture some of those funds. But in 2008 at elementary, we had 2,152 students in the elementary summer school program. At middle school, we had 942 students. And at the high school program, it's divided by semesters, first semester and second semester. First semester, we had 1,212 students. And second semester, we had 911 students. A semester is about 2.5 weeks of summer school.
Thank you.
First number, 2152 students for elementary. We have blue cards now. We do have an awful lot of blue cards, so we're limiting it to 1 minute. I hate to tell you, but we just have to limit it. The first speaker, Ms. Lisa Sharman, followed by Bruce Marcus and Matthew Melissa. Ms. Sharman?
Good evening, trustees. My name is Lisa Sharman. I'm the president of Capistrano Unified Council of PTSAs. Last December, our unit presidents, legislation representatives, and executive board members participated in our own budget workshop and then presented you with a list of potential cuts and possible revenue enhancements. Since then, we have watched the budget shortfall number steadily increase. Knowing that you would begin to make some difficult decisions this evening, last week, our unit presidents and legislation representatives, along with input from their members, ranked programs only to those pertinent to their school level in order of manageable, barely tolerable, and devastating. Again, we looked at the impact to children and the classroom and stayed within the guidelines of PTA. You should have received those lists last Friday. It is my sincere hope that you have all reviewed both documents. CUC PTSA's position is simple and consistent. Keep the cuts as far away from the students and their programs as possible. I wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have your list. Thank you. Bruce Marcus, followed by Matthew Melissa and Dan Fong and Matt Melissa. Mr. Marcus.
Good evening. Tonight I'd like to point out the financial benefits of keeping the elementary music program and illustrate how it will save the district money. The concept of reverse economics lies in the principle that the long-term effects of the elimination or reduction of a program are more costly than the initial savings anticipated. In 2005, Dr. John Benham of Music and World Cultures Incorporated analyzed the financial impact of instrumental music programs in the state of California. What he found was that because of the elimination of elementary music programs in the state, the enrollment in music at the secondary level was reduced by 57%. And because the music teachers on average carry a greater, much greater student load than non-music classroom teachers, the amount of non-music teachers required to teach the same amount of students actually increased, thus increasing the outlay of teacher salaries. His findings concluded that the state had an annual loss of over $8 million due to the increased student load in subjects other than music. As those students who are now in music are put into other subjects instead, those non-music classes grow larger and require more teachers, since other academic classes cannot have 60-plus students in a room like the band can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Melissa, Matthew Melissa, followed by Dan Fong and Matt Melissa.
Hi, my name is Matthew Melissa, and I would like to address the subject of elementary music. Our current economic situation is unavoidable. We must decide which programs are truly necessary to our students' education, and we must eliminate those programs which are not. The choice of which budget items to dispense with will be very difficult, yet we cannot cut elementary music. Elementary music serves as the foundation for creativity in young students, facilitating an individual work ethic and desire for improvement in an activity which many students come to love. I can remember the deep fascination with my saxophone during my fifth grade year. I would spend hours faithfully practicing, consuming myself in an activity which provided something above the ordinary. As a saxophone player, I had a creative identity in which I could unleash my youthful dreams and desires. Would I become a virtuoso saxophonist performing in Carnegie Hall, or would I become a jazzer and play in a nostalgic big band? The roots of these hopeful dreams were established through elementary music, and I must admit, many of these same idealistic goals take hold of me now, even in the midst of academics and demanding extracurricular activities.
Thank you, Mr. Melissa. Dan Fong?
I think there was a mistake. I don't know if I was supposed to be put in twice, but.
Okay.
So,
you're up here with Dan Fong? Fong?
I think
Kevin Hama?
I would like to continue the speech.
Through my continuing musical education, I have accomplished many of these idealistic goals. With the Lisa Miguel High School Concert Band, I have traveled to New York City, performed at Carnegie Hall, and have received a resounding applause from that. Through unending hard work and dedication, our marching band was crowned the 2008 WBA State Champions, and through the Pacific Symphony Youth Wind Ensemble, I have been able to perform in the Ethereal Renee and Henry Segerstrom Hall. Dreams can come true.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Would I have been able to accomplish these amazing feats if not for elementary music? Without an elementary music program strongly encouraging, almost mandating music education, I may not have elected to enter music, a previously foreign subject to me. The achievement of the impossible would have been left to mere chance. Elementary music must not be cut, so as to preserve the dreams of the desires of the future. The profound impact that elementary music has on my life supersedes all of the other forms of education, useful as they are. We must allow others to experience the same chance to dream. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Melissa, followed by Aaron Cutney and Brooke Soto. John Melissa, Ms. Aaron Cutney, followed by Brooke Soto and Stephanie Black.
Good evening, trustees. I attended the last two workshops, one on budget and one on facilities, and I noticed a huge contradiction that needs to be addressed immediately. At the budget workshop, one of the things that was at the very top of the list was elementary or block music. Once you take away block music in elementary school, you will not need the music teachers in the upper levels because the programs will collapse. Most of the students who continue with orchestra, band, and choir do so because they were exposed in the fourth and the fifth grade. And if you take that away, every single student in the district will suffer. Most students, even if they never go forward, gain from the knowledge that they get in the fourth and the fifth grade. I can promise if you take away block music now, in 5 years, you will not have the high-quality marching bands, choirs, orchestras that we currently have. And that brings me in the contradiction. Why in the world are you planning to spend $25 million on two fabulous state-of-the-art theaters when you are axing and killing the programs that will be using them? I think you need to make a priority, either performing arts and music included is very important, and we support it all the way around, facilities and teachers, or we don't, because you don't need to spend the money if you're going to take away the programs.
Brooke Soto, followed by Stephanie Black and Susan Hama.
Good evening. My name is Brooke Soto. I'm a freshman at San Juan Hills High School, and I'm here to talk about cutting block music. Last Monday was a great privilege for me to perform in my sixth year in CUSC's Honor Choir. A few points I make will hopefully put your decision into greater consideration. With the block music, it inspires kids at an early age to find their musical or creative side or the right side of their brain and explore more options. When you get into middle and high school, you have more elective choices, which is really fun, but how do you know what you wanted to take without experiencing some choices first? By being in a music class in fourth and fifth grade, most students decide to continue with it, and it truly helps them academically as well. Statistically speaking, students involved with music score 40% higher on all tests. Not to mention, choir also teaches different languages with the wide exposure to a variety of song lyrics. Students interested in music will learn to be more confident and comfortable in front of people since they get to do what they love, such as sing or play their instrument in front of their peers. They develop better social skills by being involved with more people rather than just the same group of friends. I thank you for your time and listening to me speak, and I hope you will take my points into consideration and not cut block music.
Thank you. Stephanie Black, followed by Susan Hama and Purcell Stiver. Ms. Black? Susan Hama? Purcell Stiber, followed by Bill Tetz and Tyler Mastracchio. Tyler, I know I did that.
Hi.
Good evening.
I'm connected to the district in three different ways. Number one, I teach French and German in the adult program, and I've taught at the high school level and at the college level, but most of my career is spent in international business. I've worked and lived in five different states and five different countries. And I teach in this program because I'm gratified to see the enthusiasm of my students for subjects that would be very difficult for them to find anywhere else. And I also teach because it's a pleasure to see a program that's so well run. The administrators of the adult program and the community education program are dedicated and they're very efficient and they're a real pleasure to be associated with. That was 1 minute.
Thank you for coming this evening. Bill Tetz and Tyler.
Good evening, trustees. I'm here to support community and adult ed, and I've worked with community ed the last 4 years offering college admissions test prep through community ed, and as a result, we've been able to offer test prep options or classes to over 1,000 students. And we work with a lot of other schools throughout the state, and there isn't as much participation because there's no way to really funnel kids through affordable programs like the one we do at Community Ed, and we also are able to kick back 50% of the revenue to the Community Ed program. So I'm here to support the work that they do and affordable and accessible opportunities that classes like ours offer through community and adult education. Thank you.
Thank you. Vita Cantacesi, followed by Jean Kravitz and Brennan Gabola.
Tyler Strachan.
Ms. Cantacesi.
Where's Tyler Strachan?
Tyler.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be me. I'm Tyler Mastracchio. I'm a senior at San Clemente High School. I'm in the IB program, and I'm also in fine arts. I take photography. I don't think it makes sense to cut that spending because I enjoy both of them a lot, and they've helped me. They help you think. They help students think in different ways. They help you get into college. The IB program is like nothing I've ever experienced. Second of all, I just want to congratulate all the kids that have been honored for their school. You know what I'm talking about. Congratulations, guys, and I'm pretty sure most of them took IB and fine arts, so those are the kind of kids we're going to be losing with cutting funding.
Thank you. Ms. Vita Cantacesi, followed by Jean Kravitz, Brian Gabola.
Well, good evening. Here we go again, dealing with problems and issues that none of us created but are left to deal with. No one wants these budget cuts. Everyone wants to keep CSR, music, library, field trips, after-school programs, and the list goes on. How can these programs be possibly saved? As distasteful as this will sound to many of you in this room, the unions and the trustees must renegotiate their contracts. We are in dire straits, and concessions must be considered. We are not alone. The state and the country are also doing this. All options must be on the table to save all that is needed to give the children of Capital the high quality of education they deserve and expect. If we do not do this and programs and teachers are cut, we have failed miserably and measurably, and the children will be the biggest losers. Please work together to renegotiate contracts in any effort to save vital educational programs. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you. We appreciate your comments. Jean Kravitz. Brian Gabola. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Brian Gabola, and I'm a senior at Elisa Miguel High School. There are many benefits to choir. Choir is more than just a bunch of sounds. It's a culture. It's learning a whole new musical culture. It's learning self-esteem and how to do the right thing after school by singing or playing your instrument. It's being part of a group, having your own family if your home life isn't so great. It's making music. It's making something of yourself. It's leadership and also learning how to trust your peers. It's stress relief and something to look forward to at the end of a hard day. Choir is so much more than just a bunch of sounds. It's a lifestyle change, a family, a life skills builder, and the best thing I've ever been a part of. Please, I urge the board to think of what they're doing and not to cut choir and not to take this opportunity away from people. Thank you.
Thank you. Victoria Hart, followed by Judy Heidel. Ms. Hart.
Hello, my name is Victoria Hart, and I'm just a student. I'm a senior at Lisa McGill High School, and I've been choir for 11 years. It is my home, my one stable thing. It's basically my family. The honor choir video you saw earlier made me cry because that was the first song I sang in school. Something that happened 11 years ago in high school, in elementary school, that makes you cry should be so important. The fact that I had no friends. I just had my parents and my elementary school teacher. Choir taught me morals like no one else has. It's taught me perseverance, integrity. It's taught me how to work and learn as a team. More specifically, my current teacher taught me these things and more. He taught me how to really work for my goals. No one else, and I mean no one, has given me as much hope and support as him. In short, without my music program, my family, I would be lost. Remember, I'm just a student, but what I am fighting for will change people for years to come. Thank you, choir teachers, for changing lives, and thank you, board, for listening to me.
Thank you. Ms. Heidel.
Once upon a time, there was a land called Orange County. It was famous for its wealth and beauty, its magnificent homes, luxury cars, abundant sunshine, and glorious beaches were the envy of the planet. One day, a fairy came upon a young child weeping at the edge of the great ocean. "How could it be that you are crying?" she asked. "I know of no other place so beautiful, so prosperous, so teeming with opportunity." The child looked up at the fairy, unable to stem the flow of his tears. "Forgive me," he whispered, "but you were mistaken about opportunity." The fairy tenderly wiped the tears from his cheeks. Then she settled herself beside him. "Tell me," she whispered back. "It is the grown-ups," he began. "They do not seem to understand that education is our greatest resource. They say they do, but they don't. Do you see that large ship far from the shore? It is our school district. It has no captain. It is lost, and it is sinking."
Thank you.
To be continued.
Trustee Christensen.
I would like to thank everyone that came here tonight and presented the programs that they'd like to save and the teachers that they'd like to save. And believe me, we all up here on this board want to do the same thing. I don't think there's a soul on here that wants to cut any jobs or to eliminate any programs because they're all so valuable, including, you know, music, sports, choir. I mean, you just go on and on and on for the list. The problem is that the state has been spending, as it was brought up tonight, as though there's no tomorrow. We've been given 50 potatoes that we have to stuff into what they've given to us, a 10-pound bag, and you just practically have to look at it. Something has to happen. Something has to go. There's $25 million that have to be cut, and we cut last year down to the bone. I mean, there's just, frankly, there's just nothing left, but we have to do something. The facts are that there no creative financing will solve the problem, and it's going to be a collective give and take between everyone at CUSD, and all of the California schools are in the same boat. I mean, they're all going through this same thing. There's many options that have been presented to us in the last budget meetings and everything. There's quite a few on the list. We have not determined at this point, and we don't want to make a determination at this point, what's going to be cut. You know, we're not talking about cutting any specific program at this point, and we don't want to cut any. There are certainly an array of options. There's a lot of options out there, and many of them are negotiated options that have to do with everyone involved in the school district. And some of these options you hear about are taken by businesses every day. You hear about them in the newspapers, what they need to do in order to remain solvent. And we have to look at every option that is out there in order to remain solvent and to save the school district. We just need to be practical thinkers and practical doers. You know, I can't help think, but one of my fondest person is Benjamin Franklin, the founding father of our country. And it's nice to see that the children here are still here. As you probably realize, that he was instrumental in keeping having our revolution actually work and bringing the French in so that we became a nation. But probably what you don't realize is that he nearly died the night that he took his last trip to France, going to port. It was the century year storm. There's the rock edifice there that has eaten many ships and lost many lives. And they were at that point. The captain was sure that he should be turning starboard, but he couldn't see the compass. It wasn't operating. He couldn't see the bow of the ship. And at the last moment, he made the order to do hard to port and missed those rocks by inches. Well, when this story was told to the French government and the clergy that were there that next morning while he's asking for their help here for the United States to be formed, the clergy said, well, let's build a monument. Let's build a church, something up on the rocks, to because this was a miracle, and we should monument it. Well, Mr. Franklin, being a practical man that he is, said, well, if you have the funds, why not just build a lighthouse? And in some respects, this really applies to us here today. I mean, some things can be very simple and be right in your face, and you just may not be able to see it. As educators in this room and everywhere out there, you must ask yourself, why did you become part of the education system? I doubt if it was a selfish reason. I'm sure it was more altruistic reason and possibly a higher calling, if you will. If there's any profession in this nation that could be called an honorable profession, it is the education profession. Because what you are doing, you're not only affecting the lives of the person that you're teaching today, but you're affecting that person's lifetime. And by that, you're affecting the next generations. And so the future is being molded by what is happening in the schools today. And by that effect, not only the future of the United States, but the civilization itself. And it truly is all about the children. I mean, we've heard that phrase so much in so many different places, it's become a platitude for special interests. But we, all of us in this district, need to make it a core value. It really, truly is all about the children. And what can we do as employees of this district and concerned citizens and parents? What can we do in the next month or two to present the options that we need in this district so that we can make the correct decision and hopefully not have to cut jobs and hopefully not have to cut any of the programs? The students have the inalienable right for a good education, and I hope that we can have that happen in the next couple weeks.
Trustee Winston.
Thank you, Trustee Christensen. This is really hard, and our staff has been working really hard since November when the handwriting started to become more apparent, and we've had many budget workshops. I think all the trustees have separately had conversations with staff about their ideas about how to structure this process so that when it comes down to decision-making time, we do make the best decisions with the best information available. And In the agenda item for this week, for those of you who went online, there's one grid that's really important to me, and that's the one that came out of the Education Department, and that's the work of Art in Progress, but that's 19 pages of programs that were identified on Mr. Leb's menu of horrors as potential cuts. And the Education Department has started ranking these things, and to me they're the people who know best. Must keep, should keep, beneficial, and can be eliminated. And that's a little bit like what the PTA Council did. And thank you for that hard work. That's really helpful, and keep on refining it. But I'm looking to the Education Department to really make some recommendations about what is core, what do they think gives us the most cluck for the buck, the most bang for the buck. And with that information, as they refine it and make their rankings, which is really nothing I know they want to do, because right now every program is precious, and every person who works in every program is precious, and every child who attends every program is getting something precious out of it. We've got to do it because the system is broken in Sacramento, it's broken in Washington, D.C., and we're all part of that, and we've let it happen, and here we are, and now we have to restructure things here. And as Mr. Lev has pointed out, we need to do it this year for the next 5 and 10 years. And that's going to be really hard, and it's going to require some differential thinking. And the teacher who talked about how the music program is one of the few who can service 60 kids a period, that's a good point. And we need to... We need that kind of information. We have to take qualitative information like that and turn it into quantitative information and make it useful. And we're going to do that. And I guess the two meetings that Mr. Leves has asked us to schedule at the end of March are going to be really grim, but important. And I just ask that everybody be patient, everybody realize that it is the collective work that's going to lead to these decisions. And yes, we're going to have some really tough conversations and with the collective bargaining units, and we'll end up somewhere. We don't know where that is right now, but we are going to maintain the schools and the programs, and the kids are going to be educated, and the programs may morph, and whatever we do this year, we may change again next year and the year after that, but we'll get through it. And just think about that every time you go to the polls and vote for the people in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions of staff on this item? We move on then to item number 36. Reduction of certificated employees, non-management. Ms. Lovely.
Thank you, President Adonisio. I think to start off this item, there's three terms that I just heard in the last conversation that really set off this next agenda item. Mrs. Sharman described barely tolerable and devastating, and then I just heard Trustee Winston say menu of horrors, and I think that those are really the three ways to describe what we have before you tonight. Since January and beyond, the grim state budget finally was passed just last month, actually, but staff, as trustees have already acknowledged, and Mr. Lebs and his team have been working feverishly to try to sort through all the multiple layers and the details to determine the implications for CUSD of this final budget that was passed. We are looking at $25 million locally in cuts to achieve the balanced budget that the trustees want to have to get us certified budget at the end of the year. So this item before you tonight is one of the most painful that the board has had to consider up to this point. It proposes for board approval the discontinuance of particular programs and or services next year that could result in laying off nearly 345 certificated non-management staff members, a horrific number indeed. Because California law requires that certificated employees be notified no later than March 15th, 15th of a given year, if there's a possibility that the following year they could be reassigned or laid off, we're forced to bring this resolution before you without knowing the full details of the budget. And as Mr. Lebs has said previously, our school district is in a state of quantified ambiguity. There's really no other way to describe it. In accordance with the education code requirements, we're also seeking board approval on the tie-breaking criteria, which is part of your resolution on page 3 of Exhibit A. And these are the criteria that would be applied in the event that more than one employee has the same seniority date, and with 345 certificated employees that we're looking at, you can imagine that several dozens of employees have the same seniority date. So this tie-breaking criteria would narrow down the points given for those seniority dates, but ultimately what would happen is to break the final ties, we would have to hold a lottery. And so we have that as part of the resolution as well, that the lottery would occur by May 5th. These were things that we had to go through last year, and many of those same individuals, in fact, most of those same individuals will sadly be affected by this. So with that explanation, staff is available to answer trustee questions. I know that you have President Adonisio more blue cards. Some of the music cards are also a part of this item, so we'll turn it back over to you.
Did you wish to speak before? Thank you, Ms. Lovely. Before the blue cards, Trustee Bryson. Trustee Bryson.
A lot of words have been used, but the bottom line is it's a terrible thing to ever tell anyone that they will not have a position. This happened to my members in my extended family of all ages already, and all of us up here are painfully aware that this is a personal thing, and it's not anything that we take lightly, and certainly it has caused a lot of anguish to our administrative heads, including Acting Superintendent Suzette Lovely and everyone else in the staff building. This has been a very, very sorrowful process, and we deeply, deeply regret it. And we can only hope that somewhere, if we keep searching and reviewing every contract, canceling every consultant, reviewing everything we can, that we might be able to retrieve some of these people as we move forward. But it's got to be day in and day out work, and everyone up here has made a commitment to that. Day and night, the phone, the email, the everything else, nothing is taken lightly here. Everyone understands the sorrow that may or may not come to individuals. And please know that we all absolutely, not only deeply regret it, but we're searching for avenues to rectify it as we move forward. We're hoping that as we move forward, we will find answers that will provide the ability for us to say, come back to your CUSD home. Come back where you rightfully belong. And that's what we will work toward every single day on behalf of the students here. And when it comes to this list, in reviewing this list very carefully, I'd like to commend the staff for creating something that will alleviate a lot of the problems that we had the last cycle. I think this is a really specific and excellent way to help ease the pain by easing the confusion of what is possibly to come. And I'd like to thank you for the work on that. I know it was extremely unhappy work for you to have to do.
We move on to speakers. A minute and a half each. We have 17 cards. 11 cards. Marlon Johnard, followed by Dante Belletti and Roger Gellis.
Hello. Good evening, members of the board, Madam President. Someone has exceptionally affected my life, exerted herself, enervating herself until that damn ungrateful teenager navigates towards success. Well, she's being delivered a pink slip. I appreciate, teacher, what you've done and your refusal to surrender my education. And she's not alone. Reroute the microphone to other dismissed teachers and their cries will exponentially populate. Ladies and gentlemen, uncertainty and fear has influenced the best of us. It's time we prevail. Cynicism and self-interest is no longer acceptable. We're mutually potentially disrupted by this economic snafu. I understand passion and emotion will conflict reality, but you're going to need to trash this conflict in support of a meritocracy or something like that. We've resorted to pink slips, but that's business sound preemptive cuts do not negate your ability to command. Members of the board, in spirit of hope, rally with the faculty on the ground and let's allocate layoffs and crisis measures to the politicians. We can salvage this district. We've not exhausted our arsenal. Fight, damn it, fight. Emerge from this ruin and keep us in class. Do not expel teachers in the infancy of their careers to an unpromising, unstable job market until you can candidly complain of fatigue, stress, or expended ammunition. We all serve this district. Grief is inevitable, and in some areas, it will go unsung. But an idea is bulletproof, and we can still surface operational. And try to claim off.
Thank you. We get the idea. Thank you. Dante Belletti.
Hi. My name is Dante Belletti, and I'm a junior at Elise Miguel High School. I was first exposed to music in my kindergarten year, and my teacher was Jerome Healy. I learned something then that changed the course of my life. I learned that I love to sing. I continued singing through a PTA-funded primary music program at Oak Grove Elementary and continued with Robin Hervey and Misa Vash during black music instruction in 4th and 5th grade. Some of my fondest memories of elementary school are my music performances. I do not remember the magic moment that I learned to read or the thrill of memorizing my multiplication tables, but I do remember singing. It was with great pride that I tell you I have been selected to be in the district honor choir concerts every year since 4th grade. I was inspired in middle school to take my love of singing outside the classroom, form a band, and start to write my own music. I was never a very adept writer, but a song is only as good as its lyrics, and I placed first in the poetry division of this year's Saddleback Writing Contest as a direct result of the practice songwriting gave me. I auditioned for Madrigals my freshman year and was the only ninth grade student selected to participate in the most advanced choir ANHS has to offer, my director there is Jason Arney, and over the past 3 years, he has grown into a good friend and mentor. As a member of Madrigals, I had the once-in-a-lifetime experience of singing in New York's Carnegie Hall along with other students from around the country, and it was one of the most amazing moments of my life. So listen, I just want to implore you to please fight this. Don't let them cut the music. It is all that I am. It is the blood that pumps in my veins, to not try to sound cliche. It is me. And I know fellow students that come to school because of choir and stay for English and history. And without choir, I'm not sure if they would bother to show up. And I know that you're going to spend approximately $22 million to create. Thank you. For the Arts Centers, for Dana Hills and Capitol Valley.
Thank you, sir.
Who perform in those facilities? And I think it's ridiculous that you can spend an hour talking about garbage and give us a minute to talk about music.
Roger?
I just had a quick question. Can I still turn in the blue card? Like, oh no, I don't want to be like thrown out. I just like want to know if I could get. No, I swear. Can I just like turn it in?
What item is it?
Possible? It's just the blue card. Like, I'm not trying to get.
Are you Roger Jealous?
What?
Who is Roger Jealous here? Or Gellis?
I was just trying to turn it.
Del Dinger? Susan Gerling? Diana Geller?
My name is Susan Gerling. I'm a music teacher here at CAPO, and I'm with the little kids, the K to 3s, and I stand up for them. You all know you're all intelligent. You've all read stuff about brain development, about how music develops every part of you, the body, mind, and spirit. These guys took my whole speech away. But I want to listen to the little children, because I really believe that only one argument matters to me. There was a teacher told me at George White, March 4th, said, Mrs. Gerling, I'm so glad you're here. This is the only thing that this child can do that's successful. And that's a special ed child. And all of these music teachers hear this every day. I'm not the only one. So please, do what you can for the children. Thank you.
Thank you. Diane Geller.
Thank you. You've heard so many different arguments from students and from teachers tonight. I'm not going to reiterate everything they've said, but I just want to say one thing or a couple of things about the K through 12 music education program, and that is that we are all in the business of developing our children's brains, and there has been so much research that has come out since the 1980s about brain research and the fact that music is one of the key elements that makes this patterning happen. We know about people such as Eric Jensen, Howard Gardner, and so forth, who posit that there are 7 to 9 different intelligences, one of which separate intelligence is musical intelligence. And some children make the connection to all the other academics through this link of music. Because of that, we have a learning window that is critical from birth to 12 years old, and we do fill that learning critical window from K through 12 with music. And it also has to do with the fact that music is considered a core subject, and it's part of the general curriculum within the spectrum of the No Child Left Behind mandate. Therefore, our second point is the fact that our music programs here at CAPO are based on the national and California standards for the visual and performing arts. And therefore, from K through 12, we provide very highly sequential musical instruction, and it cannot be left to just any person to fill this in with a docent or after-school program. We have highly qualified credentialed teachers who do this. And so we just thank you that you allow us to do that, and also because we are the purveyor of the civilization of the next generation as part of our children's rights for education.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Jason Harney, followed by Heidi Reisler and Cynthia Mocknick. I did.
Good evening. I'm Jason Harney. I am the choir director at Lisa Nagel High School. A couple of thoughts. You're going to hear lots of similar things. But one is that Trustee, I can't read the name, Suser, told us that you were disappointed with the state and the elected officials. I couldn't agree with you more. And then you said that they know what's best for our students, the California Department of Education. I suggest that these people know what's best. This is their children and their students. It's not, yes.
I believe Mr. Winston was referring to the educational division here, not the educational division at the state.
I thought you said the
was that correct?
Okay.
Right, here.
Okay, I apologize then. Well, I still was to make the same suggestion. The people that came out tonight are the ones that know what's best for the children. And I know you guys have kids in the district, too. No? Okay. You need to... I'm 0 for 2. Let me try this one. You need to be the board that in the future... When things turn back around, everything looks rosy again, because it always does. Things come in cycles. People look back on you and say, how in the world did those people manage to weather that storm without cutting music? That's exceptional. And be those people for us, because it'll come back around. You can't plug it back in 3 years and we're all gone. It'll collapse. It's not like a class you can just take and choose from. It's 13 years, a decade and a half almost, of articulated expert instruction. And if it's gone in 16 months, it won't come back that easily. So don't let it go now, please.
Heidi Reisler, followed by Cynthia Mocknick.
Good evening. I'm part of the Blue Hat Club, and I'm only a parent. I don't even teach. I'm not a student. Thank you, Sue Palazzo, for answering my email. I appreciate it. Yes, you did, and it was nice. Thank you. I'm a parent of a sixth grader and an eighth grader who are, of course, in music, and they came through the Block Music Program, and I have to hold people like Jerome Healy, Ann Ludwig, Robin Hervey, Quinn Thornburg, Marianne Tucker, personally responsible because they have started a fire under my children that I cannot put out. I have spent more money on violin rentals and viola rentals. Ah, you're smiling, look at that. And I have bought a saxophone, and I have bought a violin. I run my children hither and yon to lessons, and it's all their fault. This music program matters. It is key. It is core. I don't know where my kids would be without it. My kid was stunned in the car today. He said, Mom, if they drop Block Music, what's happening at the middle school? What's happening at the high school? That's going to be a tough question to answer if we cut these programs. The block music is the baby steps to the middle school program where the kids play every day and they get really, really good. And then our outstanding high school choral band and orchestra programs. And they're awesome, and it's no accident because we start building in the primary grades and specifically in this block music program. Music, they don't just learn music, they learn discipline, and they learn teamwork, culture and enrichment. And when you go to that honor band concert tomorrow night, please don't let it be the last one for our fifth graders. And remember, these building blocks are really important. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Cynthia? Could be Molnick now that I look at it.
Thank you so much. My name is Cindy Mocknick. I'm a parent of two students here at Capital USD. I have a fourth grader who is playing an instrument for the first time, and my daughter Shelby, who's here, this is her eighth year in choir, and I had the pleasure of attending that honor choir concert that you saw on the screen, and I think the children's, their faces, the joy, the dedication says it all. But I did want to read really quickly an excerpt from an article that was written by a music student on the importance of music education in the schools and how it does stretch across the disciplines. Music is a science. It is exact. It demands acoustics. The conductor scores a graph that contains volume changes, melody, and harmony, all the while keeping the group at a constant pace. Music is math. It is based on rhythmic subdivisions of time and patterns done in a split second. Music is history. It's an indication of time and environment in which it is created. Music is physical education. It requires an immense amount of coordination of fingers, hands, arms, lips, cheeks, and facial muscles. It requires complete control of your diaphragm, back, stomach, chest muscles to ensure that each and every note is clear and on pitch. Music is foreign language. It's compositions written in Italian, Latin, German, French, and Spanish. It is its own language, using symbols to represent ideas. Music is a universal language that brings us together. Music is art. It represents the greatest form of art that allows humans to transform notes on a page into emotions and feelings that cannot be measured. I am so proud of our students who are here to speak up for a program they love that has changed their life. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Dennis Jakes, followed by Karen Ahola and Sean Payan. Dennis? Karen Ahola?
Good evening. My name is Karen Ahola, and I'm a San Clemente resident. I'm here tonight to ask that you remove, through your vote, the music, arts, and language programs off the table of subjects to be cut from our school curriculums. I work professionally in the arts, and I can tell you categorically that there is a direct correlation to the health of our community and the amount of arts and culture in that community. Culture and art in a society does not magically happen. It is the result of arts education in our schools, beginning at elementary level. If you remove the music program at the elementary level, this will negatively impact music at the middle school level, which will impact music teaching at high school and on into society. Given that as a society we cannot afford to have no arts or culture in our society, I hope that as an educated school board, you can truly appreciate the cost of cutting arts from our children's curriculum. You cannot chop music and blithely think that there will be no impact. This simply is not the case. Music, arts, and languages should emphatically not be cut from our school's curriculum, nor should the teachers who teach those programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Sean Payne.
Hi, I'm actually, I'm Dennis Jakes. I was on my way up.
Sure.
So I'm Dennis Jakes. I'm a senior at Elise Senegal High School, and this is my fourth year in the Madrigals. Without music in the school system, I wouldn't know what I want to do with the rest of my life. Because I was introduced to music in elementary school, I continued it all the way through high school and plan to make a career out of it. You might say that I owe my entire life to music in school. Music is not only good for the soul, it's good for the mind. Being in a music program at school tends to create a more logical way of thinking, and people in music programs have a tendency to score higher in other classes than most other people do. So even if someone doesn't pursue music for the rest of their life, they still have more skills in other areas than the average person. Some more things to think about. Our district was in the top 100 for music in the nation in 2006, and getting better every year. If you cut music in the elementary schools, not only will you cut elementary music, you'll be cutting high school music, and all that work will be down the drain. So do the community a favor. Please don't cut elementary school music. I've been in music since kindergarten, and I've been in the district honor choir 8 years. I was the only freshman in my freshman year in the Madrigals, and I sang in Carnegie Hall in my sophomore year, and all these experiences have made me a better person. Before I leave, I'd like to share a quote by Victor Hugo. He said, "Music expresses that which cannot be said, and on which it is impossible to be silent." Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Sean Payne.
Hi. Before my time starts, I'd like to say I have respect for you guys and you guys, so I'm like mutual.
Okay.
I swear.
Like Switzerland.
Teachers. What are they? Teachers are a valuable key to success. They are role models who aspire to inspire and want to teach all they have to offer. They are a cushion through hard falls in life, leading us in the next direction. They are needed to keep us students on track in this beautiful song we call life, giving us a chance to contribute our own verse. Whether one or 1,000 teachers, a teacher is a teacher. And our verse would be considered like prom, for instance, and school dances. I know you guys liked your proms, you know, it's a memorable thing. So it would be like part of your verse. You can always look back in like the old like yearbooks and stuff and like remember. So I want to have the same like pictures and like happy memories. And I would enjoy having it next year, but I respect any decision you guys have, so I just hope you do the best. And I'd like to say that us three have the best teacher, and she's really inspiring to us.
We want to say that she could potentially be getting fired, and if you're out there listening to this, we love you to death, and we'll do anything for you, and that's why we're here. So God bless you wherever you are.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Those are our comments for item number 36.
I did have a comment.
Trustee Christensen.
When I came from the business world and first saw how the Board of Education developed this system where you had to put these pink slips out March 15th before you could do anything for the entire year after that, where you had no option, I was actually pretty shocked. And unfortunately, that's the way the system's set up. We have no control over it. Hopefully these pink slips that do come out, which gives us an option of somewhere down the line of doing something, will change. I can imagine what it must be for teachers and classified people and their families and not knowing what's going to happen several months down the line, whether or not you're going to be keeping a job. And that's a situation which I'm sad to see happen like this. And hopefully we can just tell you a couple months from now, I'll just tear them up. We were just kidding. But I'm not sure if that's going to happen. If it gets to that, there are the items here where we're giving 1 point for various different things, and hopefully maybe Suzette, you might be able to see if we can add something to these. For instance, I noticed that there's no points given for a certificate to teach AAA, gifted students, and also there's a new program out which is quite a lengthy program to be certified. It's the National Board Certification, which Obama and the NEA have both described as being achieved by the very best teachers in the nation. And there are some of our teachers that are going through that program, but it's not on this list and they're not getting any credit for it.
I can address those, Trustee Christensen. The
One of the things that the staff had to look at was trying to narrow the criteria so that it could cover the key priorities that the district has relative to the significant programs that we were looking at, and it would not try to differentiate all of the different programs and staff development that our teachers have had and make it very difficult to break any ties further. So, for example, if we looked at giving points for everyone that has had AAA training, which would be a significant number of this 345, at least at the elementary level, that would just create additional ties in that band. We would also need to look at a number of programs. Our staff development program in Capistrano has been extremely rich, and our teachers have had training not just in AAA. They've had training in literacy development. They've had training in math development, in the GLAD, English language strategies. And so we, as a staff, looked at that and considered what happened last year in the RIF, where it did become very problematic because there was so much staff development. We also have no way, as we're issuing the points, of assigning those without looking through each transcript in their personnel file, which is quite comprehensive. So the one point with the tiebreakers to try to break ties, not create more. That's why the AAA program was not included. The National Board Certification, I believe at last count we had about 15 teachers that were nationally board certified, not a high number, but we could certainly look at adding that.
And that's a pretty...
it's pretty rigorous, yes.
It's very rigorous, where a couple of all of these on here are for one day, you know, and they get their certification, but the National Board Certification takes quite a bit.
Actually, could you... Which one were you thinking of that's one day?
Actually, it was brought up to me, and I can't remember which one it was.
I think all of the ones that we have on here were pretty comprehensive. IB, for example, International Baccalaureate.
Right.
Those teachers get extensive amount of training. They often have to be sent out of state for that training, and it's very structured because it's part of the IB program. And then the same with the AP classes, and then with AP Advanced Placement, they also have to have training in grading the tests. They grade other districts' tests so that they can be better at helping their own students prepare for those tests.
Well, the National Board Certification is fairly new, and it is extensive, and I'd like to see if we could consider that on.
Sure, we can add that. So if we amend that, we'd be comfortable adding that. And as I said, I think we have under 20 teachers in our district when I last checked that are nationally board certified, but we could certainly add that.
One other item, actually it relates to probably any of them, but particularly with item G, which is the advanced degree, the master's and the doctorate. Everyone knows that it's quite extensive in order to do that, and that there's only one reason why the teachers are doing that, because they want to better their education, and there's a lot of work. I'm sure there's several of them that are going to be graduating or getting that degree this year. I mean, probably only a couple of weeks after we determine by this point system, and it'll be in place the following year. I don't think people should be penalized. If they're that far into the program, they're ready to get their doctorate or their master's come June, but we're voting just a little bit before that time, and so all that's wasted, and they get laid off.
Not necessarily they get laid off, but they might have a lower lower point in the lottery. But that is the criteria in which the state establishes that you have to set a certain date to look at these things. For example, we have some teachers that will be getting additional credentials as well that might not be finished until June, and so you have to have a cutoff date. And I believe, Jody, is it by May, March 15th? And for the master's degree as well.
For the master's degree, I believe that the administrative law judges have done in the past and accepted them up until the date.
So up until the hearing date, if they've got a master's degree that they're finishing, the hearing will be at the end of April. So we'd be able to look at that. What you can't do is add points after the actual hearing and people in progress like that as well.
So that's the Board of Education item. We have no control over that.
That's the education code.
Education code. Okay. Thank you.
Trustee Palazzo?
Yes. I had a question.
Suzette, just to verify, these cuts that we're making to our staff, this is the $25 million that we had to come up with, this staff. This was based on maintaining the salary and benefits of the staff that's remaining at the level of the contract that we're voting on tonight, which is the step and column they keep, and we pick up the health benefit costs. The district picks up the health benefit costs. So the staff, this was based, you came up with this number of figures based on maintaining the salary and staff. Is that correct?
Yeah, this correct, Trustee Palazzo. This resolution does not take into any factoring of what could potentially happen with collective bargaining. It's the current, you know, as things are today,
as they are today,
and it allows the board to potentially have that maximum flexibility that the board's been talking about. Does it mean that all 345 of these individuals will ultimately be laid off? Not necessarily if certain programs are not cut, but to be able to have them to even be considered, the board would have to take this action tonight.
Okay, based on that, what I've just said. Thank
Correct.
You. Bottom line is we're looking for successful labor negotiations, aren't we? Any other comments? Do we have a motion to approve? I'll make the motion to approve. Second? I beg your pardon.
Are we going to amend for Trustee Christensen's
point? To amend the resolution on the tiebreaker criteria to add a letter I, which would be 1 point for national board certification.
Yes.
Do you want to amend your motion to include that?
I will amend my motion to include the tiebreaker national board. Thank you.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Trustee Brick. Trustee Bryson.
Aye.
Trustee Palazzo.
Aye.
Student advisor Chase Ishii.
Aye.
Trustee Christensen.
Aye.
Trustee Maddox.
Aye.
Trustee Winston.
Aye.
President Adonisio.
Aye. Item number 37.
Madam President, and I know you have blue cards on this item as well, along the same vein as agenda item number 36, a similar process and requirements have to be followed when a school board is considering potential layoffs or reassignments for certificated administrators. And while our certificated administrators don't have the same statutory rights to a hearing as teachers, and the tiebreaker criteria does not apply to them, they too must be notified by March 15th if there's a possibility that their position will be eliminated or restructured in the ensuing year. Because a proposed reorganization plan isn't yet ready to present to the board, this action provides, again, the maximum flexibility that trustees would have in the ensuing months as the budget decisions, or actually ensuing weeks now as the budget decisions are made. So Resolution 0809-52 seeks two separate actions from trustees tonight. Action number one is to authorize staff to notify the 62.7 certificated administrators that their positions and or services may also be eliminated next year. And action number two would authorize staff to notify the remaining certificated administrators that are not identified for possible layoffs that their salary, their work year, and or their health and welfare benefits may be reduced in 2009-10. To that end, we need to amend the resolution on page 1 of 3, Exhibit A, which is on page 333, on the second to the last paragraph, and I appreciate this was brought to my attention from one of the trustees. We left out health and welfare benefits in this whereas. So it needs to read, whereas it may be necessary to give the notice to employees who may experience a reduction in salary, work year, and or health and welfare benefits prior to March 15th. So we make that recommended addendum to the resolution. And then we are also available again for questions or comments. And again, I know you have some blue cards, I believe, on this item as well.
You know, I just have...
Trustee Palazzo?
Suzette, do the CUMA, the management personnel, are we obligated to use the MEBA for them also, or can we go out, can the board go out for a different health plan for the management personnel?
I would have to ask Mr. Brister that. There's nothing that's bargained for management as far as health benefits, but I do know with Amoeba there's the benefit of having the larger numbers in the pool.
Right.
So what would be have to be looked at is could you, for that smaller pool,
yes,
I'm
just wondering.
Yes. Is it the question, Mr. Brister, is could the CUMA group look at a separate benefit option that's not under the MEBA?
The board could entertain that.
Okay, thank you.
Comments, public comments. Zach Kirsch, Katie Barnes, and Molly Trelawness.
Sorry, Zach Kirsch had to leave early tonight, but with the board's permission, I'd like to speak on his behalf.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. My name is Kevin Rich. I'm the ASP president at Elisenaga High School, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the six activities directors that are proposed to be laid off. I understand that activities directors, that position does not directly affect as many students as maybe a music teacher does or an art teacher, but ASB and activities at schools affect so many students, in fact, every student at every high school. And I know one of the earlier speakers came up here and talked about what your guys' fondest memories of high school probably were, you know, prom, winter formal, these type of events. And the removal of these activities directors would, you know, drastically hinder those events and, you know, ruin those memories for a lot of students. And I just want to speak briefly on it, and that's all I have to say about it. But I hope you guys can come to a decision where we can keep those activities directors. Thank you.
Thank you. Katie Barnes. Molly Trelawness. And we have Ms. Heidel, who had a second card in that was missed last time. Did you care to speak again?
So, the fairy gazed upon the boy. "What is your deepest wish?" she asked. The boy closed his eyes tightly and tilted his head toward the sky. "I wish that the grown-ups would stop fighting. I wish they knew that I need to be taught by excellent, well-paid teachers. I wish they knew that I cannot learn in overcrowded classrooms. I wish they understood that the loss of up-to-date textbooks, librarians, custodians, guidance counselors, and music will have real repercussions. Most importantly, I wish they could realize that if they take away opportunities from their children today, they can never, ever be returned. They cannot give them back to us in 10 years when they have finally fixed their budget. It will be too late." The fairy waved her magic wand over the boy, and he fell into a deep slumber. In his dreams, the grown-ups rose to the challenge. They stopped arguing, and instead they discussed parcel taxes, bond measures, and real solutions. They examined every possibility. In his dreams, at long last, the grown-ups really got it. May all our children's dreams come true.
Thank you. Comments by the board? Questions? Do we have a motion to approve resolution number I beg your pardon, Chase.
Just another comment to add to what Kevin was saying earlier. I understand that it is a difficult process, a series of decisions being made, and I wish it was as black and white as advocates could paint it. Obviously, you know, to make a decision one way logically would completely ignore ideas of compassion towards students we've heard speaking, but to completely make a decision out of emotion would deny, you know, rationale thinking and logic. So it is a difficult situation to make. I listened to a lot of the music supporters coming up, and not to say I'm in any way advocating cutting the program, but you listen to the passion they speak with, the fact that they're willing to sit in a room like this at 10 o'clock at night and talk about that. It shows, you know, the benefit that programs like that can make. And just regarding the activities at director position, you know, the sad thing is, in a lot of those hallways of those schools, there's kids that will never do that because, you know, they have nothing that they feel passionate about at school. And I feel that that's where student government reaches out to. It hits those students that haven't necessarily found their niche, that haven't necessarily found their home. And to reduce or eliminate that position really adds constrictions upon the ASB, the student government, to reach out to those students. I'm not speaking to amend this because I understand that in issuing pink slips, you are leaving all the opportunities available, you know, no matter how regretful those opportunities are. I would just ask that you guys would take into consideration how much it affects students that don't necessarily have that area to be passionate about, because, you know, they're just as important whether they're the majority or the minority, they're there.
Thank you for your comment. Do we have a motion to approve?
This is really tough.
Resolution number 0809-52. I'll make the motion.
Second.
Without further comment, then, roll call, Ms. Bose.
Trustee Brick.
Aye.
Trustee Bryson.
Aye.
Trustee Palazzo.
Aye.
Student advisor Chase Ishii.
Aye.
Trustee Christensen.
Aye.
Trustee Maddox.
Aye.
Trustee Winston.
Aye.
President Adonisio.
Aye. Item number 38. Ms. Williams.
Thank you. Good evening, President Adonisio and trustees. I would just like to say before I get into my item that while we did get the news that Tesoro High School did win their basketball game tonight and will proceed into the next game tomorrow night of the state tournament. So a little bit of good news to interject. We're proud of our athletic programs. I am very pleased to bring to you this evening a request for approval for two high school courses. The first is Coordinated Science 1, which meets the high school requirement for physical science. And the second is Coordinated Science 2, which meets the high school requirement for life science. These two courses represent the work of Ed Division staff and teacher and department chair committees to improve our high school science curricula. These courses have been piloted over the last 2 years, and trustees have received copies of the recommended course outlines. Coordinated Science 1 replaces a course that we had called Integrated Science and replaced it with a course that focuses on earth science. This brings our course in line with the tests that ninth grade students must take for a California standards test. Our previous course, as the standards were developed, was not as much in alignment. For Coordinated Science 1, we can already look at some data that we have been comparing over the last 3 years, and we see a significant improvement in the achievement of our students who have performed at the advanced or proficient level. We've gone from 28% to 46% in that time period, and we look forward to continuing to work with our teachers with the power standards and increasing this number even higher. Coordinated Science 1 represents a course that was called Life Science and some other electives that also were not adequately aligned with the California state standards. In 2006, there was a mandate that all sophomores will take a CST, a California standards test, that will be used to judge accountability for the state and also, more importantly, the Under No Child Left Behind. So this course is very, very important. We feel that it is very well aligned now and provides a course that will enable our students to perform at high levels and prepare students to move on to more rigorous coursework such as biology. I'd like to point out to the trustees that we've worked over the last 2 years to look at the criteria for placement in high school science as students matriculate into ninth grade, and we are using more data, not just GPA and teacher recommendation, but also student performance on the California standards test. We've been over the past year, we increased the number of students who went right into biology by over 200 students. We're very thrilled about that, and we look forward, this year we fine-tuned it, and the students that we did place are being very successful. We've been monitoring that. So our science curricula at the high school are, we are building a strong foundation and getting ready to move students into even more rigorous coursework. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Trustee Palazzo.
It's a class for the high school. It doesn't meet any college requirements.
These are non-college prep courses for some of our students who are not quite ready for success in biology. But with our new criteria, my passion is to make sure that every student who is capable is placed in biology, and we're monitoring that very closely, Trustee Palazzo.
Trustee Bryson.
Congratulations. 200 more students who have a grasp of biology is a wonderful thing. And being a person who's always concerned about math and science, as you know, Carolyn.
Yes, thank you.
I am thrilled. Thank you for that.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion to approve?
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes 7-0. High school course approval, coordinated sciences 1 and 2. Thank you. Item number 39, home to school transportation fee increase. And Mr. Lebs.
And yes. Patton. Yes, thank you. I'm going to have Mike Patton, our executive director of MOT, address this one.
It's pretty straightforward. With the transportation cut last year, we cut about $3.5 million. We're still encroaching about $270,000. We want to take another dent out of that and pass the cost on to the users. 20% increase would increase our funding by about $120,000, taking our encroachment to $150,000. It's our goal to work that encroachment down to as close to zero as possible. Last year we did not raise bus pass fees. We have a history of raising it every couple of years. I think with this, the amount of cuts we're looking at, I think it's only fair that we pass some of this encroaching cost onto the users of the system.
Good point. Trustee Palazzo. No comment from Trustee Palazzo. Any comments? We have no blue cards on the side. Mr. Maddox?
Just curious. There's nothing we can do this year, but kind of looking forward, do you have any kind of a best guesstimate as to what the kind of dollar threshold is that we could go to such that we could actually add routes the following school year?
Well, we could actually charge up to $1,000 per head.
It's realistic, though, to actually, we don't have a diminishing return in the amount of users.
I would say, we could raise the fees to the point where we could add service. We could do that, and we could come back. We've approached it in a sort of a bite-sized chunk, and 20% is kind of a hefty increase. But we could certainly look at doing another increase once we cross that threshold of break-even. Then we could certainly add routes. At that point, and we can pencil it out. It's a pretty straightforward equation, so we could certainly look at that and come back with a plan for next year. If the board wanted, we could go back and and do a, you know, 40% raise. And
maybe we could just get some numbers and some ideas, something, you know, later on.
Sure.
I don't need this next week, obviously. Okay. But, you know, this is less than using the toll road.
And it's a great deal.
And there's I think there's a lot of kids who would greatly appreciate the ability, or a lot of parents would greatly appreciate the being able to send their kids on the bus and be willing to spend a few dollars to make that happen. And we can bring back some of our drivers.
We'd love to return some service.
Okay, thank you.
Trustee Winston.
At the time the board decided to cut the 40 routes last year, there was a lot of discussion about trying to network with OCTA and increase the utility of the OCTA routes on getting kids to school. Have you been able to monitor that? Is that an ongoing effort? Where did that end up?
About where it was before we made the cuts. We did have a meeting with OCTA. Their planning is long-term. I've always found that while they are very cordial and friendly, there's very little that they can do to support our schools, and they don't add service to support schools. The demand has to be there and be established by OCTA, and then they add service, and that's a lengthy process. Meeting with them is always nice and informative, but I haven't found it to be very fruitful as far as getting additional service for our constituents.
So they don't know how to create their own demand, is that what you're saying? Or they don't want to? The flip side of what Mr. Maddox is talking about is that a lot of the riders are currently people who are going to be hit really hard by the increase. I mean, weren't the routes that were preserved in some ways to serve families and children who really needed it more than others?
Well, they weren't. We didn't go with the plan that served the low-income population specifically. We went with the option. The equity plan served the highest demand areas, wherever that fell, where the most riders were. So,
as determined by what criteria?
To pass data, basically the biggest demand that we were currently serving, where the largest number of riders were. So our per capita ridership on the routes has gone way up because we have them placed at the highest demand. So there are a substantial number. I couldn't tell you the actual percentage of paying customers that. You know, that would be riding. So we're not necessarily serving the free and reduced exclusively, although they are part of it, and they have and they get a free pass based on.
So this fee increase won't impact them.
If you don't have the ability to pay, there's a criteria, and you receive a free bus pass or a reduced price bus pass based on your income levels. It's all set by the state and the free lunch criteria.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have a motion to approve? Do we have a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes 7-0 to home to school transportation fee increase. Thank you very much. Item number 40. Gym floor and bleacher replacement, Dana Hills High. Mr. Lebs.
I'm going to have John Forney address this one.
Thank you. Good evening, trustees. As you can, I actually do more than just security here. What I'd like to bring forward to you is just open up for discussion for the gym floor at Dana Hills High School along with the bleachers. They're original to the construction back dated 1973, and it's been brought to maintenance attention, now mine, that the gym floor has exceeded its life expectancy, and it's become a huge safety issue. So I'd like to bring it forward for discussion to see if we can move forward to work on replacement of both the floor and the bleachers. If you had any questions.
I read something about fundraising going on for the Dana Hills floor. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
The Dolphin Force is raising funds for it.
Do we take that, or how does that work?
We're planning to fund this repair through deferred maintenance. Anything they raise could help offset some of that cost, but what we've done is, as you know, deferred maintenance is one of those categorical programs that is sweepable, quote-unquote. We've taken a hard look at what we have on our funds and what we plan to receive and what we plan to sweep, and we're in the process of developing kind of the five-year run out of that, so we make sure we preserve enough funds and prioritizing needs. Just real simply, like roofs would be number one, you know, to take care of roof leaks, and then HVAC issues, flooring issues, and then there's a variety of other things out past that. This particular repair is needed, and we don't use the term a safety need often unless it really truly is a safety need, and we have floorboards buckling and trip hazards on the floor, so it makes it very difficult to conduct sports. The plan is, if the board's open to this, that we'll move forward with it, try to get the work done over the summer so that it'll be ready when school comes, when they come back in the fall, if at all possible, to coordinate both the floor and the bleachers.
Thank you. We do have some blue cards. We'll take the blue cards first. Trustee Bryson. Martha McNicholas, please, followed by Marilyn Amato and Donna Rajikas.
The two ladies following me are going to be much more eloquent than I am. I just wanted to let you know that if it was not 10-10, we could have the room filled with people who use the gym at Dana Hills, just like the music people did. In fact, I know there were some people here earlier that had to leave. So, you know, if you want to bring this up earlier on the agenda, we can pack the house.
We know that the Dolphin Force sent a lot more emails.
Okay.
We understand the need. Thank you.
That's pretty good.
But thank you.
I also wanted to point out, which they will probably also point out, is Dana Hills is the only high school that only has one gym. So it does get double duty.
Thank you.
That's why it's wearing out.
Thank you. Ms. Amato?
Yes. Dana Hills High School is the second oldest high school in the district, and unlike some of the other schools in our district, we're not a vocal group that comes to the board meetings time after time to complain about getting our fair of district funds. Instead of complaining, the parents of Dana Hills have gone and helped to fundraise in many different areas. An example would be that last summer the water polo and swim teams purchased the bleachers, new bleachers for the pool, and went in with their own money, and they went in and painted and refurbished the area. Our SOCA Foundation, besides proactively working toward the raising of $4 million funds needed for the new theater, have spent their time and own money again to paint and update the theater to the best of its potential. The PTA has offered money for shade covers, books, and scholarships for students. The Dana Hills Dolphin Force Foundation purchased draperies for our mall to use during presentations, and a complete new sound system for both the theater and gymnasium. And this year is proactively collecting funds for the gym floor and bleachers. Dana is the only high school in the district to have one gymnasium. With only one gymnasium and a school population of over 2,900, the floor of this 35-year-old facility has been worn through. It has been refinished numerous times, and it is now to the point that it cannot be revived. With the economy being what it is, all the fundraising efforts are slow at best. It will take years to fundraise the over $500,000 necessary to replace the floor and bleachers, and meanwhile, it has become a safety hazard with split boards and nails sticking out. The bleachers in the gym are also 35 years old and no longer meet the current ADA code requirement. We have not complained and only supported what and where the district has not met our needs. Dana Hills High School needs your help. Please agree to replace the gym floor and the bleachers so that work can be completed over the summer, enabling students at Dana Hills High School to have a safe gymnasium in which to play by next fall. May I invite all of you to come to our school and see for yourself our gymnasium and make the decision wisely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Donna Rajikas.
Trustees, thank you. I'm the parent of an 05 graduate and a junior currently at Dana Hills. I know you see the need for the renovations to the Dana Hills gym, and I thank you for your support and consideration of the proposal to do so. I understand you have many challenges before you, and I appreciate your efforts to approve this. At the same time, I request that you put the plans into motion as soon as possible. We have but a few days that our only gym is not in use. Since there's a lead time of 4 to 6 months, it's critical to act promptly. We couldn't function very well at Dana Hills without our only gym used by all our students when school is in session, and we really can't wait another year. I urge you to put this proposal on the fast track if there is such a thing. I've been a volunteer and strong supporter of our teachers, administrators, and students for 12 years, most recently as the leader of the Dolphin Forest Foundation. Our primary goal is supporting site improvements that benefit the highest number of students and enable excellence in their achievements. We've had support from many in our Dana Hills family for our Save the Gym campaign, but our efforts alone are insufficient at this time. On behalf of the Dana Hills family, I'm requesting implementation of the renovation plans for a safe gym to be completed before the start of school in September, if possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Trustee Bryson.
In view of the fact that, one, they only have one gym, two, it's the very old, 35 years, three, overwhelmingly use the safety word, and in a litigious era with many lawsuits already stacked up, I don't think we need one more from an injured person on this floor from tripping and falling, which is usually the number one cause of those things. So I think, from my perspective, I hope we move on it very quickly.
Trustee Christensen.
I also would like to move on this very quickly. It's obvious that the floor and the bleachers need to be replaced. I do have some questions, Mr. Forney, if you might answer them.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if it's because we don't have a fully operational facilities department in place yet, but why was WLC, the architectural firm, brought into this, and how were they authorized? Because generally, something's brought to your attention, something's needed, and you just, you know, you can go out and you know, these are two standard items that really you don't need an architect for, unless you need ADA compliant bleachers, but some of the manufacturers already have those provided, and you just really need an architect's signature. But, so why were they brought into this?
Okay, let me respond to a couple of points there. One is, you do need an architect to work on this because the bleachers have to be approved by DSA. There isn't a set of bleachers that's like pre-approved. The bleachers have to be kind of wed to the site or to the project. So the architect has to design that, and then it has to be taken through the DSA process for the bleachers. The floor we could probably just do without an architect necessarily, but because the bleachers are involved, we need to have an architect brought on board for that. How we came about bringing WLC on board, they're not under contract to do this work yet. This is simply a proposal from them. If it's the board's wishes that we seek another quote from a different architect, we can do that. We basically only have two architects in our pool at this point. But they've been around, they've been working with us. We had some conversation with them, felt that their proposal was relatively reasonable and they could get started on it, and that's why they've been placed on this.
Well, I think what flagged it is there's a possible $490,000 cost for doing the work. However, there's an $80,000 cost for the architectural, which also includes possibly the contingency. The very best case, that's $30,000 for the architect. The very worst case is anything up to $80,000. There's no possible way that an architect can spend that amount of money for shop drawings for bleachers.
I'm trying to look at the proposed architectural soft cost.
Page 207.
Yeah, but I was looking at their proposal to see what comprised that. Part of that is the project contingency, not necessarily
right,
their
fee.
Which
would be a maximum of
$49,000. You know, I'd be happy to go back and have another conversation with them about their fee. I mean, that's completely within the realm of possibility.
Right.
And we could see if they would be willing to revise it, lower that fee, and come back at the next meeting with it. This is just, we're not asking you to approve this at this point. We're just bringing this to you for discussion, and we would bring it back at the April 13th meeting for approval.
Well, I wish you would do that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
This is beyond what the cost should be.
Trustee Maddox?
With respect to the architectural firms being used, I haven't bothered to obviously take a straw poll among the board members, but I'm at least one member that would like to see us look at a multiple architectural firms to really kind of see who we best work with and where we get the best value. And perhaps we should start looking outside of those that are in our current kind of lineup and give them the opportunity to take a step up to the plate.
Staff is in complete agreement with that. We would look forward to the opportunity to issue an RFQ for architectural services and kind of develop a quiver, so to speak, of architects that we could use for a variety of different projects, and then match up the different talents with the various firms with the projects that we have. So we'll be happy to put that together and bring that forward within the next meeting or two.
Trustee Bryson?
I hope we're adhering to the state mandate to hire a certain percentage of veterans in the construction projects, and I've been observing that from day one. 2 years ago, I made the request because it wasn't implemented then, and I hope as we move forward that that requirement by the state is met by the district.
Thank you.
Trustee Winston.
I concur with all the trustee comments I've heard on this item, and I'd also like to make sure that staff does what it can to accelerate the schedule so that it can be ready for school in the fall, and not to the point where they're sweeping the sawdust off of it when the kids are showing up in the fall. And the schedule that you have here looks pretty tight and ambitious, and I don't know what can be done to move it up a little bit.
Well, we're pushing it, and what we would hope to do at the very, very least is get the gym floor in and then get the bleachers possibly replaced over Christmas if something has to give. But we will move this forward as quickly as we can. We're constrained by a number of things, manufacturing timelines, et cetera. The intent is to move it forward, try to have it done in September.
And at what point do you select the contractor?
The contractor would be selected under a bid process, so we have to go out to public bid.
Okay. Well, when you put that bid together, figure out some way to encourage prompt construction.
We will do just that, to the best of our ability.
Yeah, they usually respond well to incentives in that business.
It would appear the board concurs this is a great project. We look forward to hearing more about it in April. Thank you. We look forward to a gym floor. That's the concern. Thank you. We're moving on to item number 41. CUEA recommendation of settlement agreement. Do we have a motion to approve? I have two cards, actually. Ms. Rhonda Whalen and Vicki Soderbergh.
Can I go first?
By the way, you're welcome. You're first.
Trustees, thank you very much. It's with great delight that I see this item on the agenda tonight. It's too bad more of our members are not here, but they do know that this is on the agenda, and they're very hopeful, and we welcome this. As Mr. Joel Montero from FICMAT said last week, or whenever we had the last budget meeting, we need to get negotiations behind us. This is certainly the first step in doing so, and we look forward to moving forward with that. In all the budget talk that I heard tonight, I was sort of surprised that I only heard, and maybe it's just my mishearing, but I only heard from Trustee Winston about the fact that this budget crisis is not going to be a short-term event. And in fact, it's going to be a long-term. And I believe, Trustee Winston, you said something about we might have to look at restructuring 3 to 5 years. And that's certainly true. This is going to be a long-term problem. That's all I've heard from Mr. Lebs every time we've had a budget workshop, is this is not something that we're going to be able to get by quickly. And long-term problems, by name, nature necessitate long-term solutions. And long-term solutions need thoughtful and deliberate decisions with all the facts at hand. And I was sort of surprised the board didn't mention to any of the speakers tonight that we've got three big holes as far as what we don't know about our revenue. Now, again, Mr. Lebs may have some information here that I don't have, but at this point in time, I believe we don't really know if we're going to get the federal stimulus bill money. We know it's supposed to be coming to us, but we have to bypass Sacramento first, and we have no idea whether we're really going to get that money or strings attached or whatever. We don't know about the budget. Trustee Winston mentioned the May 19th election, which is very critical. I've been telling my members that if the my understanding is if all six propositions don't pass on May 19th, that the state legislature and the governor will go back to their drawing board. And we may, in fact, be looking at the best-case scenario budget right now, which in and of itself is pretty scary. And then we don't know, I believe, Mr. Lebs, we have looked at the fact that class size reduction or CSR regulations are coming in, and we're getting a better handle on what that looks like. I was heartened by Trustee Maddox's quote in the online register article on Monday. We, too, hope that there can be some modification on CSR, and we can hire back some teachers, maybe looking at CSR a little differently, as Trustee Winston talked about, maybe some kind of restructuring. The bottom line is the whole purpose of sharing this with you is that we too, President Ed Denizio, would hope for successful negotiations, but success won't come if one side comes in with just one answer. And I don't think the answer to our long-term budget problems are going to come in a simplistic package. It's going to be complex. It's going to be multifaceted. We're all going to have to work together, but we have to look outside the box and look at some creative solutions. For after all, we do want successful negotiations for both the employees as well as the district. Thank you again for this agenda item, and thank you for voting in the contract for this year.
Thank you for your comments. Ms. Whalen, Rhonda Whalen.
I'm glad CUA has a settlement, and CSCA hasn't had the opportunity to begin negotiating yet. I wanted to remind you that we've asked you in the past to refrain from discussing negotiable items in the public. We've asked this in the spirit of wanting to bargain in good faith directly with our employer. I'm asking you once again to discontinue talking about negotiations, to give the public the impression that programs will be restored if CUSD is able to get concession from the employees is misleading, because the truth is negotiations may not be completed in time. We intend to bargain in good faith at CSCA, and I hope you'll respect our requests, and by doing so, create a positive environment for negotiations to begin. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Do we have a motion to approve? Second by Mr. Maddox, Trustee Maddox. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes. Settlement of agreement, 7-0. Thank you very much. We move on now to item number 42.
We wanted to pull that. Steph,
we wanted to pull that. However, we do have some comments from the public. The item has been pulled, so the public understands the item has been pulled. Do they still want to speak to this?
Yeah.
We can continue it so you can hear the comments.
All right. Mr. Fox, followed by Aaron Perryman. And Thomas Gore.
My name is Jeff Fox. I'm a San Juan resident. I have three children who attend CSD schools. I'm very upset that the item was pulled and wasn't pulled. All of us have been here for the meeting and waiting to talk. This item is extremely important. First of all, I am going to strongly recommend that the trustees, even though it's been pulled, unpull it and take staff's recommendation to approve the Joint Community Facilities Act. This agreement, not only out of everything that I've heard today, this one agreement is something that will actually save the district some money. We've been in ongoing negotiations for a number of years, and I've been here speaking to this group about this issue. And this agreement will put some of that to the past and finally settle an agreement that not only will start the process of finishing San Juan Hills High School and their stadium, but will also eliminate potential and probably possible litigation that is coming from this. if this agreement is not passed, I think you're going to be facing immediate litigation from the developer and wanting their payment. Regardless of that, the money that will be saved if this is approved will obviously be the reduction of transportation costs that we will endure for having another year of not a home stadium for San Juan Hills High School, but more importantly, and I know a number of the trustees that are here were not involved in the process before, but there's another CFD that is attached to this agreement. That's the Ladera Community Facility District. There's a number of funds that are available there that will not be available for the other projects within the school until the projects that are identified in that CFD are approved. And candidly, I've been hearing about projects that gym floors and other things where these CFD funds, once all the projects are available, could be used for those facilities. So I strongly encourage you to unpull the document since I didn't hear it being pulled the first time.
It was my mistake. It was not pulled, sir.
It's not pulled.
It's not pulled.
Oh, well, then there we go. All right. Well, I strongly encourage staff's recommendation and go with this. It will actually save money. Not to mention that this will be going into our third year with no football stadium. In light of what I've heard today, I think a lot of people are saying, well, is the football stadium the most important use of those funds? We don't have a choice. We have to use those funds to complete the project, and I strongly encourage you to do that. I've been watching home games through a chain link fence for the last 2 years, and I think the students, the faculty, and the parents deserve to have a completed school. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Perryman?
Hi. Thank you for letting me speak tonight. My name is Aaron Perryman. I have a son that goes to school at San Juan Hills High School. He also plays football and he plays basketball. I'm not going to get into all the details of the CFD and everything, but I think it's important to finish the stadium because what we've done is the family, the families, the kids, the players, the athletes, we've all created a sense of community, a sense of family that we've done through sports and getting to know each other and hanging out with each other at these events and traveling to these events. But I think the kids are owed and should get their stadium so that they can have their home game. So when they have their homecoming, they can have their homecoming and not travel to another school to have it and then come back home. I think those things are important for them to have that sense of ownership to their high school so that in 3 years, 5 years, whatever, they can come back and say, this is my school. This is what I helped complete. This is where I played. This is where I achieved this goal as athletes. So I just ask that you do approve and pass and go ahead and approve the stadium. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perryman. Thomas Gore, followed by Marcy Backus and Ali Omaran.
Good evening, and thank you for allowing me to speak. I think it seems fairly clear what our course of action should be here. We have two items, action items, that need to be approved. And first to note is there's no financial impact involved here. It doesn't impact the district's general fund. We already owe the money via a promissory note, and now we're just talking about getting Measure A funds, Melrose, and the state's facility funds. So there's really no financial impact. And settlement's been reached, and we've resolved the dispute. And thus, I think we would avoid, you know, further costs and potential litigation by the contractor. So I just think it seems like a no-brainer here to approve this and get it passed and get this solved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, trustees. My name is Marcy Backus, and I'm a proud parent of a San Juan Hills student. I've open enrolled my daughter at that school, and I'll be open enrolling my son this year as well. I'm here to respectfully ask you to approve the CUSD and the Whispering Hills agreement. Again, it has no financial impact on the general fund. This money is coming from Melrose, from Ladera Ranch area, the Prop A funds, and this will not affect the other schools in any way. The interesting thing is
volunteers at Dana Hills who deserves very much the bleachers and the things they're looking for. And every day I drive my daughter to school, I see our bleachers laying in the parking lot waiting to be installed. If they lay there too much longer, they won't be useful either. And these children, again, I don't need to tell you, you all know that. All of us deserve a finished high school, and we all deserve a great high school. And I ask you that you respectfully look at this. It is, as you say, a no-brainer. I see that it's not going to impact us financially in the general fund. And I ask that you look at this carefully and approve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ellie O'Modrane. Apparently it's not here. We've had some developments in the closed session with regard to this item. They're very positive developments, but it does require some follow-up work. Thus, we are continuing this item until next month. So, but it is very positive work. Trustee Bryce?
Actually, we were very excited in closed session because of the positive things that we saw there. So we hope that you will understand that we're looking forward to sitting on our stallion seats and waving our pom-poms and wearing our T-shirts, too.
Thank you. Item number 43, board policy revision.
Good evening again, President Adonisio and trustees. This is a board policy related to school-connected organizations, and I would like to make it clear that it does not include PTA. These are booster clubs and foundations, and all of us, of course, are extremely grateful for our parents who support many of our programs, and our booster clubs and foundations are very important to us. This policy defines the relationship between the school and strengthens those connections so that principals can work closely with their booster clubs who really are not under their purview, nor are the foundations. But we wanted to make sure that the policy delineated what the relationship would look like and encourage strong links with the booster clubs and foundations.
I'd like to continue this item for 2 weeks so I can research it further unless someone has an objection. Anyone object? Continue it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just need to do a little bit more research.
Thank you.
Item number 44, board policy, employee-student non-fraternization.
This is a second reading, President Adonisio, that we're bringing back after last month's input, and we did check with Orange County Department of Education and get some feedback on some of the trustee questions. So we've got some suggested revisions in here from Orange County Department of Ed, and we are asking for board's approval tonight.
Do we have a motion to approve? We have a second. Mr. Brick? Do we have any further discussion on this item? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much. The item passes 7-0 for the new board policy on non-fraternization. Item number 45, CSBA Delegate Assembly Election. Does anyone have any comments on who they may want to have on the CSBA Delegate Assembly? Trustee Bryson.
Sorry. This is for the overall list that we have. Is that correct?
Yes.
I would like to nominate Matt Cunningham for that. Or Matt Harper, I'm sorry. Wrong name. Matt Harper.
So you're including Matthew Harper?
Yes.
Any other names?
Yes. 1 second, please. I need to open my book here.
Mr. Maddox.
Okay. Well, if I might, we might have a duplicate list to some degree, but I would add Judy Edwards.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Jose Moreno.
Yep.
Andrew Wynn. And Elizabeth Swift.
I'll agree with that. Thank you, Ken.
It is a duplicate list. Does it? So we have now Judy Edwards, Matthew Harper, Jose Moreno, Andrew Nguyen, and Elizabeth Swift. Any other comments or questions by the board members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes 7-0 to include those people. Who made the motion? Was there a motion? I made a motion.
I'll second.
Motion by Adonisio, second by Winston, 7-0. Thank you. We are now recessing back to closed session. That ends our open session. Thank you very much for attending.